All right, we'll move on to introductions. David, do you want to go ahead and take these?
Yes, we have a new addition to the board, and that's Lisa House. She's our new vocational rehabilitation rep on the board, and we're excited to have her. And I won't go through her her biography, but she's very, very well qualified. Has been doing this for a while. It's not a new rodeo, but we'll try to be gentle on you, Lisa, and introduce you to the workforce world as we go along. And we did I think we already did our orientation with her. So welcome aboard, Lisa. Would you like to say anything?
Yes, sir. Thank you. It's a privilege to be part of this now. I've been on some of the work sessions and enjoyed kind of just seeing how all of this works. I grew up outside of Corsicana in the small town called Blooming Grove. So for any of you in Navarro County that know Blooming Grove, that those were my former stomping grounds. And then went to Texas. Well, I actually attended Navarro College for a little while after I graduated and went to Texas A&M. Ultimately graduated from Texas Woman's University with my bachelor's in psychology, and then found out about vocational rehabilitation, which a lot of individuals, you know, you never hear of that as a career until you just kind of end up in that world. And it's just, I've been doing that for 15 years, and it's such a joy to be able to make a difference in the lives of individuals with disabilities so that they can live successful and independent lives. And hopefully, you know, go to work and feel like they have productivity and meaning to their life, like many of us that work have that experience. And so I have 15 years in vocational rehabilitation. I have a master's degree in rehabilitation counseling. And in June, I was promoted to deputy regional director for the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area. Prior to that, I was a manager over several of the North Central Texas offices, including McKinney, Plano, and Greenville. And so I'm just really looking forward to being part of this board and anything that I can do to help with collaboration and to help in any way, I would love to.
All righty, thank you so much. We also have a new staff member in Debbie's group. Nicole Nelson's a senior quality assurance specialist, and she came to us from the contractor level, and so she's getting on board and learning how we do things at the board level. So welcome to Nicole. And so there's one more that just became official on Friday, and that's why I didn't put something in here, but I wanted to announce that we have promoted Kelly Fontenot to Workforce Development Senior Program Manager for Child Care. This puts her on the same level as Dana and Christina and Debbie and Randy. It's really an acknowledgement of the importance of child care and what we do. And it kind of follows the model that TWC has been implementing over the last 2 to 3 years. If you'll remember, child care was nested under the workforce development director at TWC. So when Reagan Miller was there, child care was under her. And then she retired and they got a new director. Reagan always kind of had an affinity for childcare and kind of specialized in it. So they brought her back as a deputy director for childcare under the director. And just them recognizing with everything that's been going on that it needed to be a standalone director position under Ed Serna. So they promoted Reagan to that position, and Courtney Arbor has the workforce directorship. So this is really, we're kind of just falling in line with the model that they have established. It's a huge part of what we do, and we've been talking about this for a while. This wasn't a snap decision by any means. So we want to congratulate Kelly on being promoted to that position.
Yeah, exactly, Elaine. Thank you very much, David. Congratulations, Lisa, Nicole, Kelly. We also are going to be losing a board member, Lisa Huffaker. Is she on the call? Can anybody tell me?
I don't see her.
I have not seen her yet.
Okay, well, Lisa's been on the board 12 years. She was one of the first board members that David Setzer did the orientation. So I think I've been on the board about 10 years. Lisa's always been one of those board members that was consistent with my early years. And Lisa, you made a comment a minute ago about learning what we do and coming up to speed. And when you get there, let me know. It is quite an objective that these workforce boards have. And Lisa was there for the entire time that I've been on the board. And I think the two words David mentioned earlier that kind of sum her up is dependable and faithful. She's always at the meetings, a woman of few words. She works with a woman's shelter, Hope Women's Shelter. And we will miss her. So,
we're putting together a letter to recognize her service on the board, and we'll be sending that to her.
Great, thank you. Okay, we will move on. Declaration of interest. Board members must acknowledge all possible conflicts included in this agenda and declare each. Board members must abstain from discussion and voting on each action on item identified. This process allows secretary to record your intentions in advance. Abstain from any item that constitute real or apparent conflicts. The next item is the consent agenda, which consists of three items this morning: the minutes of the meeting September 10th, the non-monetary incentive policy documentation and calculation of standard hours for job search activities. If anybody would wish to pull one of these down for discussion, we can do so. Otherwise, I will entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
This is Rosalind. So move.
Okay, Roz moves to approve. Do we have a second? Okay, Mickey seconds, and I heard a couple others. I apologize for that. Mickey's the one I heard. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The next item is committee updates, and we'll start off with Workforce Development Committee. Jason Gomez, you want to tee that up?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. So the Workforce Development Committee, we met on August 25th. Of course, our agenda was pretty short. We approved the minutes of our April 29th meeting. We also recommended for approval to the board two board policies. These were the two policies that were just approved in this consent item that we just did. That was the recommendation for the board policy for the non-monetary incentives. And then the second one was the documentation and calculation of standard hours for job search activities. In addition to that, we got our regular COVID-19 update, as well as other updates from Mr. Setzer. So that was pretty much our agenda. If I know we just approved those two board policies and the consent item. If anyone has any questions, though, we'll be happy to answer anything.
Any questions or discussion? Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, before we get into the Joint Executive and Oversight Committee discussion, I wanted to insert a little executive committee and or chair comment here. As most of you know, I assume the role of chair of the TOB, the Texas Association Workforce Board Association, on September 1. So I kind of wanted to bring you up to speed on the activity that's transpired there and mention a couple other items. We set up a public policy task force that has kind of an aggressive schedule. One of the meetings was to have a presentation and discussion with a nonprofit by the name of Raise Your Hand Texas, which I believe deals with the educational system in South Texas. In that discussion, there was a comment made that workforce development is a two-generation project. And that's taken a few weeks to soak in. But as I think about that, I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to get our arms around the task and the charge for workforce boards. And I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. We also had a meeting with Ed Cerna a couple weeks ago. And in that discussion, he mentioned some numbers, which I've heard a couple different numbers over the past couple of weeks as far as Texas unemployment claims. But I think what brings it home is the fact that when Texas started the COVID situation, we had a surplus of $12 billion with a B in the unemployment fund. We are now at a $20 billion deficit. So the $30 billion swing was taken up by our $12 billion surplus at the beginning and a loan from the federal government of $20 billion. So that kind of puts in perspective where we are as a state. Ed Cerna just completed his first year with the title of Executive Director of the Texas Workforce Commission. He's really a great individual, great executive director, and really genuinely wants to build a good working relationship with the boards and develop a good post-COVID workforce development project. We also visited with Commissioner Alvarez, who represents labor, last Friday. I believe it was Friday. He is a champion of the apprenticeship program. During that period of time, he mentioned funds that were available for co-location services. And when I raised the question about what does the co-location mean to you, because I'm familiar with what our board and staff have developed with the co-location with community colleges, they discussed the Austin Boards project where they're putting people in the K-12 facilities working with students and faculty on what type of educational aspects were in need and in demand in the business world. The other item that I think is kind of interesting, I've been doing a little bit of research and thought process on workforce boards in general, because taking over as chair, I wanted to kind of understand the history of the association, which is kind of young because workforce boards are kind of young. They've been around 20 to 23 years. As you board members that have been around for a while, all of them operate differently. Our board has a contract with COG to handle our staffing. That is not a model that is throughout the state of Texas. Everybody operates a little bit different and unique. But, you know, during that 20 years, one could build an argument that workforce boards substantially contributed to the boom in the economy that we've seen during the past 20 years. You know, we had the 2008 hiccup. We've got the 2020 COVID hiccup. But there's definitely a foundation being laid by workforce boards as it relates to workforce development. And, you know, that's a very encompassing word. And the other day, Kenny brought up, I think it may have been on the executive committee, a question about something being under the purview of the board. And then, and we had Carvin, our attorney, on the line, and he sent an email to myself, I think it was staff, David Bristol, and Kenny, which was the state statute that outlines board duties. So I've asked for that to be included in the packet. I haven't really reviewed this meeting packet to assure that it's there, but I but I've been reading that for work that I'm doing on the TOB level. And I find that that is very interesting and certainly identifies areas that we need to be working in. I had lunch yesterday with an individual that was involved in a project here in McKinney, which I thought was kind of interesting. It's, thank you, Christina. The statute is in your packet at the end of it. It's called McKinney Education Foundation, which started in 2005 by hiring an executive director to work in, at the time, was one high school here in McKinney. And the purpose was to align students with the resources that are available for post-high school education. And that year, they came up with $3.3 million worth of outside funding for students to use for additional education. And this year, and John Ratton, our board member, I think is on the board. I believe I saw his name on their roster yesterday. This year is their 16th year. And they secured $181 million worth of outside funding for students with the McKinney Independent School System. And that is in addition to a $10 million endowment that they have built over these years. And that's a model that I think we not only could work with, because they're, this is my impression, John, you can chime in if you'd like. They work mainly on scholarships and funding sources for higher education. And I think we could be engaging these people to work at with job certification, apprenticeship, et cetera. Do you want to say anything, John? I noticed you.
Thank you, right on, Roger. Keep going.
So I think that's that. Organizations like this are something that we could use as a model throughout our board area in various communities. And then after our last executive meeting, Kenny Weldon, our board member, United States Air Force Colonel, Mayor of Stephenville, chairman of our strategic planning committee, is working on the Tarleton State University strategic planning effort and solicited input from our board in their strategic plan. And when you read the state statute and you see the ways that our board can engage, it's really phenomenal. And when you add to that the expertise that we're developing on our board, I mean, we've got expertise from a tremendous amount of business. We've got this morning with Lisa, we've got the vocational rehabilitation component. We've got economic development. We've got higher ed. It's the expertise we have is critical. Prior to COVID, I think our board members spent a lot of time with the performance matrix, which is very important, very understandable. And we charge our staff with the securing of revenue in the way of grants and programs dollars and the delivery of our service, which is their day-to-day operations, and we do a really good job on that. But in addition to that, we as a board need to be setting policy and direction for the workforce development in the community. And I think the Tarleton strategic planning process is one component that could be a very interesting model. And I'm going to ask Kenny to comment on that later. But as we get into this discussion that we're going to be getting into, the performance update, final financial update, and the budget, keep in mind that we have these dollars, we have this budget that we're going to be coming into. A lot of it is spent and tied up with service delivery, and we really want quality service delivery. We also have what could be, I guess staff could look at, unfunded mandates where the board comes in and says, look, we want to do this, and we're kind of tasked with coming up with the resources to do that. So as we unfold through this financial update, keep that in the back of your mind. So that's kind of my soapbox for the day so far. I want to move into this joint executive and oversight committee update. But before I do that, Kenny, on behalf of the strategic committee, I know it's not on the agenda, but I just kind of brought you into my conversation. Do you want to say anything on behalf of strategic or your strategic planning process there at Tarleton and the workforce board in general?
Yeah, Roger, I could just offer a few comments here. First on the strategic planning committee, our efforts have really been focused on the board's efforts with strategic planning using TIP strategies, and Christina and David have done an excellent job. Appreciate everyone's participation in that process. The discussions most recently have looked at community partnerships, and the thoughts and input that have come out of those discussions have been very enlightening, and I think informative in our discussions moving forward. I think the decision that Christina made in particular about trying to make these focused discussions as a way for the board to really dig into some of these has proven very beneficial. Simultaneous to this effort going on, Tarleton State University implemented a contractor-led, similar to what we're doing, update to their 10-year strategic plan. And for universities, this is something that's required every 10 years, and it's tied to their accreditation as a university. So I was named a member of their planning council as a result of that effort. I introduced the idea of would the university be interested in understanding the workforce needs as a part of its planning? And I already knew the answer to the question when I asked it, because we recently hired a new president of the university last year, who's one of his main strategic initiatives is participation in the North Texas workforce, and seeing the university as a regional generator of individuals to go out into the workforce. And so that led to the question to the strategic planning committee here at Tarleton: would you be interested in, or might there be an opportunity to partner with Workforce Solutions of North Central Texas as a partner and participant in the workforce planning process? And they're very interested in that. In fact, yesterday I got an email from the chair of their committee who are wanting to meet. Well, they wanted to meet tomorrow morning, and I'm going to be traveling. But they're wanting to meet early in October to see how the North Texas workforce needs and planning might be included in the planning process. And so the door's open for us to walk in as a board if we're interested. And I'll just say that it would be an exciting opportunity for higher ed to be, a four-year university to be informed in their 10-year outlook of how to participate in North Central Texas. And, the university is based in Stephenville, but it's opened a Fort Worth campus recently. And so there's very pertinent information to those counties that are near Tarrant, as well as those of us out here in Erath County.
Excellent. So I think what I would like to hear from you, Kenny, whether you see this as something that you would want to have on a board agenda, whether you would like to put together a committee of staff and some board, how you would like to approach that.
Well, I think it would be very beneficial to put this on, a future agenda item for the board, and maybe between now and the next meeting, the strategic planning committee could discuss with staff what would participation in a strategic planning effort like this with an education system or a member of the education system. What would that look like? and maybe come back to the board with recommendations of how we might participate, either with staff or board members as a part of it, because they're basically inviting us to have a seat at the table. And the planning process is going to take us through next March, as far as the university is concerned. So the timing of this is very relevant. You know, now beginning in October and November, as a part of that participation, and so I think it might include both the board tasking the committee to work on it, and then the committee maybe bringing back recommendations to the board. But I would say for us to begin work on that in October would be beneficial for all of us.
Okay. All right. Real good. I will, I'll discuss that with staff, as a follow up to this meeting. And then, Christina, we probably should put this on an executive committee agenda and then have some discussion between now and then. And I would like to do it in a way that whatever the input and whatever the process is, we kind of note for possibility of additional work with other educational partners in our region.
Roger, it's David. Could I comment just a sec?
Absolutely.
I think this is right in our wheelhouse where we want to go, especially under, you know, our focus that we're going to have on these three criteria, one of them being community outreach. And I think this lends very well under that focus area. So we're excited to start peeling this onion and see how we can, you know, have a seat at the table, have influence. I think it's an awesome opportunity for us. And I want to thank Colonel Weldon for bringing it to us. And also, if I might sneak it in here, Colonel Weldon has a new job at Tarleton State. Kenny, would you like to tell us about your new position?
Yeah, well, it's Tarleton stood up a new college. It's called the Leadership and Military College. It's focused on leadership development as a curriculum, and then the military college piece of this. Tarleton has one of eight Corps of Cadet programs in the nation, and it's a path to grow that program to hopefully have somewhere between 500 and 700 cadets enrolled in it in the next 5 to 7 years, and it's. It's got me involved with a lot of stuff here at Tarleton now that was kind of on the periphery before, but in the thick of things, so to speak, now. So it's a great opportunity.
Well, yeah, congratulations on that.
Yeah, congratulations. That's really neat. Okay, any other discussion on that item? If not, we'll move into the Joint Executive and Oversight Accountability Committee presentation. Carlton, you want to tee that up?
I will, Roger. Thank you. We did in that committee meeting hear the performance update, a financial update, and get into the FY21 budget. So I'm going to ask Michael to start with the performance update, and then Randy with the financial update. And following that, Randy, just go right into the FY21 budget unless there's any questions.
Okay, will do.
Okay, good morning, everyone. This is Michael Nicholas. I am about to give you a brief overview of our performance for the month of July 2020. Next slide, Cherie. Okay, so according to the final release of the July 2020 monthly performance report, we met or exceeded performance within 14 of the 15 formally contracted measures for which we have available data. And the only measure we did not meet was the choices for work rate measure, which we'll discuss in a minute. Next slide, Cherie. As usual, TWC, they're not providing our claimant data and our EWA performance data within the RIN category. They have not provided this information for some time now, but hopefully we'll start to receive this information from TWC at the start of the new performance year at the release of the October 2020 monthly performance report. Next slide, Cherie. Okay, the next category is our program participation performance measures. As you can see, we met or exceeded performance in one of the two program participation measures. As previously stated, we had a negative performance status for the Choices Work Rate performance measure. We came in at about 69% of target with a current performance of about 34.73%. And as you can see, we experienced a significant decline in performance from June to July of about 2.62 percentage points. The most important point that I want to make about this particular performance measure is that all workforce development boards, we're at a negative performance status with this measure, which is directly related to the impact of COVID. TWC proposed that we utilize February 2020 data as year-end data. Now, if this is adopted, we will end the year at a meeting performance status, which is great news. Now, the next performance measure in this category is our childcare measure. We had a meeting performance status with our child care measure through the month of July. We served an average of 7,372 children per day, and we're still performing above that 95% threshold with this particular measure. And as you know, this is a great thing that we're staying above that 95% threshold. Next slide, Cherie. Now, the next category is our WIOA outcome measure category. We met or exceeded performance within all of our WIOA measures. And the most important point that I want to make with this category is that we went from a negative performance status with the adult credential rate measure to a meeting performance status for this particular measure from June to July, which is great news. With that being said, we're meeting or surpassing performance within all of our formerly contracted measures if TWC adopts utilizing the February 2020 year-end data for the Choices Work Rate measure. So once again, theoretically, we will be meeting or surpassing all of our formerly contracted performance measures. The next slide, Cherie, and I believe the next slide is our final slide regarding our ranking data. The next slide, Cherie. Yes. So as always, I provide ranking data as the final slide within my presentation. And according to the July 2020 monthly performance report, as you can see, we're ranked 17th of 28 boards and third of seven large boards with an average rank of 15.47 per formally contracted performance measure. So last slide, Cherie, and that concludes my brief presentation, and I'll take any questions if you have any.
Okay, if there's no questions, Randy, thank you, Michael. Randy, if you'll start with financial update.
All right, thank you, Carlton, and good morning, members of the board. So what I'd like to do quickly this morning, I want to save a little time for the budget presentation. So we're going to review the cumulative July expenditures, which represents the 10th month of the board's fiscal year. Not only are we going to look at the workforce board and the staff and centralized functions, we're also going to review our primary contractor, who's now Equus, is formerly known as ResCare. So we're going to have to get used to saying another name. So they're known as Equus. So they have both our contracts with child care and workforce delivery. So we'll be reviewing both of these. So we'll go ahead and get off on the first slide, and we'll start with, like I said, the workforce board, staff, and centralized functions. I'll go ahead and make some clarifications right here because it'll help us in the budget presentation. I refer to the board, for lack of better terms, I'm trying to disseminate between what the budget and expenditures we have at the board level. When I mean board level, I mean, like I said, the board, all the staff, related staff functions, all the centralized functions we do, taking care of the centers and technology, all that. So I refer to that separately as opposed to our pass-through costs to Equus for all the program delivery purposes. So for simple, to make this a little more simple going forward, I'll just refer to the board, staff, and centralized functions. I'll just refer to it as a board, and then we'll talk about Equus and the pass-through separately, and this will help us also in the budget presentation and just help us a little bit with clarity and some time. So we'll go ahead and get started. Just a quick reminder, the budget for the board's year is October 1, 19. The budget year is October 119 through September 30th, and we're currently, this presentation is through July, like I said, which is 10 months. Our approved budget for 2020 was $14,201,450. And right now, through July, as compared to July targets, we're approximately 6.1% or 863,000 behind targets at this point in the year. And we'll go ahead and look at some of the primary line items that contributed to some of this, a little bit lower than anticipated expenditures. We start with personnel costs. Typically, our budgeted personnel costs and fully loaded, which includes salary, fringe, and indirect, is about $7.5 million. And we've had some attrition. And so we're about a little over 5%, about $412,000 behind target on that. And on the next slide, we'll look at some of the attrition that we've experienced. We currently have about 38 months worth of attrition. You see all the positions that have been open at one time or another throughout the fiscal year and the corresponding months representing how long they were open. Part of being filled, you can see we still have, towards the bottom, we still have a senior early childhood specialist and two business development liaison positions unfilled. We're honestly, with the COVID and with us not going out to child care centers and being out in the community as much, those have delayed the filling of those. And so we anticipate those getting filled early in 2021. So as you can see, we had 38 months overall as months representing attrition, which was the primary cause of a little bit lower expenditures in personnel. So next slide, Cherie. And so we fund two fiscal monitors at the COG, and they've also experienced some attrition. So they were a little bit, they're actually quite a bit behind target, 24%. They've had attrition throughout the year. Prop them up a little bit. They've still completed all the monitorings for our subrecipient and taking care of all their business, even though they've been a little shorthanded. So, but the cost, been a little bit behind target on there. And then the last bullet point there, talking about personnel, just a side note, we moved our child care staff. We moved our child care staff from the third floor within CP3 on the Center Point campus where the COG is located. And so they have brand new location on the first floor, Suite 102. They hadn't had a chance to enjoy it yet because we've been working from home. But so we used some of that attrition I talked about in the early childhood specialist to fund to fund a lot of that move down there for things like furniture and cabling and movers and all that kind of stuff. So we were able to use some of that attrition. Okay, next slide, Cherie. So some other items that have been behind target, and some of those are going to make sense here. As we talked travel and staff development, as you can imagine, we've been working from home for late March. So it's been a few months. So we're not, travel had been shut down even prior to us coming home. And then a lot of times staff development activities have travel component related to it. So as you can imagine, travel and staff development budget is behind target right now, about 58%, 288,000. That's not going to get any better throughout the year. So we're going to have some savings there that contribute to some of our carryover going into our next year. Because like I said, we don't anticipate that changing. Cherie, next slide. So special projects, just for the ones that are new, I typically refer, and you'll see this in the budget presentation as well. Special projects are typically projects that are not normal and reoccurring. They may be one-time projects or projects that are just non-staff related, non-operational related type things. We had $150,000 budgeted in 2020, and the primary budget consideration for that was we were moving our McKinney Workforce Center, and we built a brand new location in McKinney. Actually turned out to be a really nice new workforce center for us, and the move got completed in early January. And we have spent the funds for that. So that $150,000 has been spent. Like I said, the vast majority on that was moving all the staff to McKinney. And then we were also able to integrate 14 vocational rehabilitation staff in there at the same time. So we got two birds out of that move. And we'll be talking a little bit later in the budget presentation about our integration of vocational rehab staff within our centers. But that's one that we did get done in January. All right, next slide. Let's talk some about our Workforce Center subrecipient. Like I said, they're now referred to as Equus. It was formerly RestCare. Just a quick reminder, they did apply proposed for our RFP for the child care contract back in the spring and our workforce center service delivery contract. And in the spring, this past RFP, they did win them both again. So they will be our contractors starting October 1 going forward. So that they were going to be up in September 30th, so that they will continue to be our subrecipient going forward. So their contract year with us is the same as the board's year. It's October through September, so they're also in their 10th month. And just a quick reminder, that $82.7 million you're seeing there, that's accumulation of two contracts. That's the child care and the workforce center service delivery. So combined is almost $83 million. And so their cumulative expenditures through July were about 7.1% or $5.9 million behind target. You're going to see a story here, which is going to be similar to the story we're talking about in the budget. They're behind in both child care and WOA, which is going to translate a little bit here in a minute when we're talking about the budget. So you can see the child care. I'm going to just use this term because, for lack of a better term, when I'm saying the normal child care, I'm talking about we have some primary grants that their primary focus is to put kids in care into our child care centers. We got roughly $50 million to do that sort of thing and pay some related staff. But I'm going to call that normal child care or at risk. That's as opposed to new COVID money we got that was child care. So as I'm talking normal child care, at risk child care, that's what I'm referring to as our normal and recurring at risk to serve the kids and put them in care. And we have a target for that from the state and all the things that go with that. So as you can see, our at-risk expenditures through July, we're real close to target. We were at target amounts. And like Michael said earlier, the state had put a target for the number of kids, average kids served per day that we were supposed to meet throughout the year, 7,633. We were through July at 7,337, which is 96.6% of target. TWC considers 95% or above as meeting, so we were meeting target. I will say this. They did, due to the situation of the new COVID situation, we started paying more in date and child care to serve kids for several different reasons. If you look down below there, we right now, ResCare or Equus has about $16.1 million in their contract for COVID-related expenditures. And you can see the things that we were asked to do with that money. We were serving additional children of essential workers, parent share of cost. And just a little bit of an explanation there, that parent share of cost, typically when a child goes into care, is approved for care, the parent, there's a calculation, a formula involved. They pay a piece of it, and then we supplement a piece of it. The part they pay is referred to as parent share of cost. But during COVID, there was a time in COVID during the summer when the state asked us to pay the entire part, our share plus theirs. And so that caused us, as you can imagine, our expenditures to start going up pretty dramatically. So to help ensure that we didn't go over our budget amounts, TWC asked us to quit enrolling new kids during the summertime just to make sure of that. And so you're probably going to see our target level spending going down some by September. I'm not sure if we're going to make target or not. It's going to be real close. And the primary reason is again, they asked us to quit enrolling new kids as we were serving these additional costs for COVID. So just to continue with the COVID explanation, like I said, serve additional kids of essential worker, pay parent share of cost. And then there's this 25% supplement. And what that's referring to is the child care centers that have remained open during this COVID time, starting back in April up to the current time, we're still doing this. They were receiving a 25% supplement payment over and above their primary calculated payment for that particular pay cycle. And so of those three you see there, that's the only one as of right now that's going to continue on past September. As of now, TWC is instructed to that would continue through December of 2020. But the others you see have either came to it. Well, both of those have came to an end. So the only thing that we're still paying COVID-related right now is that 25% supplement to open providers, which, like I said, should continue through December. All this is subject to change because you can imagine the amount of changes we've had in this over the last several months trying to address this COVID situation. So anyway, that 25% has been averaging roughly about $1.1 million, $1.2 million a month, give or take. And so we will continue to have those type expenditures, and you'll see that in the budget presentation as we go forward. That final part, we did get an additional $3.2 million right here just in the last few weeks. That's primarily for that 25% supplement. It's as of July, it wasn't in ResCare or Equus's contract. It will be by the end of the year. They're going to spend, you know, a lot of that on that 25%. Some of it's going to be carryover going into the in 21 to serve that 25% through December. So as of July, you see they had spent $7.4 million of that COVID money. I have a note there just saying it's behind target $3 million. The state didn't officially put a target on that. I just used a straight line method. We got it back in 1st of April, and I just used 6 months as a denominator, and, you know, we're 4-6 through. So that's all I'm saying there. There's not officially a target. They're spending that 25%. The essential worker and the parent sheriff essentially came to an end, so we're not spending that money anymore, and they won't let us move that from one pot to another. So that's not going to really get much better. But anyway, I just want to put that there as some kind of reference point. But we have spent about $7.4 million through July, and we'll continue to spend that 25% as we go forward. All right, Sheree, let's go ahead and finish up here on the last slide. WOA, that's another one that's behind target. WOA is our second largest funding source. It's broken out between adult, dislocated, and youth. We'll see that again a little bit here in a minute. It's 19% of $1.7 million behind target. And as you can imagine, through COVID, that really put a hamper on our expenditures. These grants are the ones we primarily use to train customers. And when I say train, I mean we can send them to traditional colleges, vocational schools, proprietary schools, truck driving schools, that sort of thing. During the COVID time, or at least during the first several months, a lot of those schools were shut down. So that obviously put a hamper on expenditures. A lot of them have started offering a lot of online or virtual type training. So those expenditures will start to increase. They're not going to get to target by the end of the year, but these grants are two-year grants, so we still have an opportunity to carry that forward into 2021 and finish the grant prior to its expiration date of June of this coming year. So that is what I have for you right now on our July cumulative expenditures, and I'll be happy to entertain any questions you might have. All right. If there's no questions, I will continue forward, and we'll start with the budget presentation, a recommendation. I'll just preface this by saying we did do a quite in-depth, detailed presentation to the Oversight and Executive Committee last week. My plan is to not go quite that deep this time for time's sake, but that by no means, if you have questions, stop. We'll talk about it. We'll get as detailed as you want to get on this. But again, it's going to be a little bit higher level. So what I'd like to do is just break this out into essentially three different sections. I'm going to spend just a few minutes talking about our primary funding sources. I know we throw out a lot of acronyms, a lot of names of grants and things that a lot of you might not be familiar with, especially the newer folks. So I'll spend a little bit of time reviewing some of our primary grants and a few of the ones that we're going to be talking about. Then what I'd like to do is talk about the available funding that I project that we're going to have from October to September this next year. And when I say available, I'm talking about new funding plus projected carryover funding. So available funding during that 12-month time. And then the last section I'm going to talk about is how we plan on dividing the money between us here at the board level and what's going to go out to our primary subrecipient, which is Equus. And then we got a little bit of money for some other subrecipients as well. So that's the plan. Again, I'm going to go fairly quickly on this, but stop me anytime you have questions, and we'll get as detailed as you want. So, Sheree, we'll go to the first slide. All right, so like I said, I talked a little bit about some of our funding. We have quite a few different grants. At any one time, we have 25 to 30 different grants running. And so I split them out just try to provide some terminology to make it a little more simple. So core funding is the ones I'm referring to as the grants that show up each and every year. We count on them to not only fund our staff and all the centralized functions we perform, but they also support the workforce centers and customers and everything. So these core funding are important to us. You can see the primary one here. I say primary. It funds of our overall available funding, it's going to be over 70% is child care. And a lot of you heard me just use the term child care generically, but as you can see, there's actually quite a few grants. They're separate grants. They're under the child care umbrella, but there's quite a few grants we get. They have different start and end dates. They have different amounts, different rules, all this kind of stuff, but they're child care related. The two primary ones, like I mentioned during the expenditure overview, was these first two here. The long name, that child care partially subsidized direct care, we call that CCF, and then the local match. Between those two, we get, the last couple of years, we've been getting new money, about $50 million a year, give or take, from those. Those are the primary grants that serve, not only support the infrastructure and our operations, but they're the ones that pay for the kids in care. And so those are the two primary ones that we're talking about. The COVID money you see there, that actually was in the first line there, that CCF. It actually came in that same grant. But because it was so unique and it was so much money, I went ahead and split it out here so we could at least see it. But they didn't put it in a separate grant. I wish they would have. It would have made it a lot easier. But they put it in the CCF grant, but it does have different rules. It has different money. It has different dates. It has all kinds of different things. So I split it out here. Then we get money for Department of Family Protective Services. We get money, this child care quality money. We'll be talking about that as we go forward. But they allocate us 2% of our overall child care allocation in the form of child care quality. And essentially, we're out there working with the child care centers, trying to improve their quality with all kinds of, you know, with mentoring staff and paying for equipment and curriculum and staff development, all kinds of stuff. So we'll talk more about that later. And then you see that automated attendance, CCAA, what that is, that's a swipe card system out in the child care centers. Parents can swipe their kids in and out. That comes, we have to pay for that. A monthly invoice comes from the company that supports that. And so we get that, TWC helps us with funds for that. So anyway, I'm not going to go into all the other grants specifically, but child care is such a big part. I wanted to talk some about it. And then the next one, like I said a while ago, is our second largest funding source, WIOA, Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. I refer to it generically as WIOA a lot, but as you can see, is it's broken out between four different grants. We get youth, adult, dislocated, rapid response. And again, like previously said, this is where we're doing the majority of our customer training. It's also supporting a lot of staff, but we're doing a lot of customer training through these grants right here. The last one there, that TANF, temporary assistance for needy families. That's our traditional welfare related type grant. We get that every year. Sharif, if we'll move on to the next slide. I'll go through the rest of these quickly. Some others I want to talk about here. You'll see the Supplement Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Most of you will recognize that as food stamp. That's our food stamp grant. They changed the name a few years ago. So we get that food stamp grant every year. And then these last three, I just want to quickly make reference to them just because they're a little bit unusual. You see the employment services. We have 52 TWC staff that work in our 11 workforce centers, and they work side by side with our other staff doing a lot of similar activities. They're employees of TWC. They're paid by them, but TWC gives us money to help support them out there, their infrastructure, meaning rent, utilities, telephone, travel, that sort of thing. Same thing with the veterans. We have 10 veteran staff in our centers. And we also get money from TWC as well to support them. They were with the Texas Veterans Commission, but starting this year, they went back to Texas Workforce. So same situation there. And then lastly, the vocational rehabilitation. That's became a department of the TWC, I think, starting back in 2000, I believe it was 16. So same type thing. We're integrating those staff, vocational rehab staff, within our workforce centers as we're our leases are coming up in our workforce centers. We're trying to accommodate them then either by moving to other locations, remodeling current locations, or somewhere in between. We're trying to do that. And as of right now, we've integrated them in five locations: McKinney, Granbury, Waxahachie, Corsicana, and Greenville. For total rehab staff, about 36 staff. And we'll continue to do that. This next year, our plans are to move our Denton Workforce Center, and we'll be integrating about 21 of them there as we integrate there. So it'll probably take us another couple of years or so to get them all fully integrated. Okay, Sharif, we move on. So that was what I refer to as our core funding. Discretionary funding is funding that's more finite in nature as far as the life of the grant. It shows up. We use it for specific projects. They tend to go away. Some of these have actually showed up for a few years, so I may move those over to core in our future. I'm not going to go over all these. Some of those we'll be talking about. If you look down towards the bottom, third from the bottom, the WOA alternative funding for statewide. We actually got that back in 2019. It goes through August of 2021. We got about $450,000 of additional WOA money. It's separate from our other. We can use it for special projects and things like that. So we'll be talking about that. And then we get performance incentive awards, or at least we hope we do. As we go in, every year the TWC has an annual conference, and they award these grants, these incentive awards for all kinds of different things. And so right now we've got a few awards. We've got a youth inspiration award we won that was $75,000. We've got a hireability award that was $30,000. So we've got about $105,000 of awards that we got back in 20. They're going to continue for it in 21, and we'll develop projects for those that TWC will have to approve, but we'll be using that for things that we typically might not be able to do. They give us a little bit of flexibility there, and we're always happy to use those awards. And then this last one, the Apprenticeship Texas Expansion Grant. We were just notified, I mean, just a week or two ago, we had applied for that, and we're going to receive that beginning October 1. I'll just read this to you. So it's to support the expansion of the Bombardier Aircraft Assembler Apprenticeship Program. And our goal here is to pay about 20% of the training cost for about 60 participants. And so it's not a lot of money. Well, it's a lot of money, but not compared to our other grants. It's about $120,000. And so we just were awarded that, and we'll be working out the details as we go forward. Okay, so like I said, that's I just want a quick definitions and some just so you can see as we talk about things, have a little bit of a reference point, maybe make some more sense to you. As we go forward, Cherise, if we could go to the next slide. Before we get into available revenue, this is a slide I've used last couple of years. It's not all-encompassing, but at least shows you how a lot of money comes to us. So you see up what I call Washington. A lot of our funds are federal. They may go through TWC, but they start up in Washington, at least 75-80% of it. So you can see here the various departments, Department of Labor, Department of Health and Human Services, Agriculture, Education. All of them, or not all of them, but the majority of them start right there. They come to the various states, Texas, it comes through TWC, and then they come down to us. TWC allocates it to the various boards. So you can see here the COG, we anticipate available funds this year of about $86 million. We're going to take some for us, for the board, and then the rest we're going to send down to Equus. You can see there about $69.8 million of that $86 million. We anticipate sending down to Equus to operate our child care program and our workforce centers. So that's just a quick overview. We'll get into the detail, but I thought this might be helpful to see how a majority of our funding gets down to us. So, Sharif, we'll go to the next slide. This next section I want to talk about quickly is the proposed, or what I'm estimating will be the available revenue available to the board from October to September, which includes both new funding and our carryover of all the different core grants, discretionary grants. This is everything. And you see here, excuse me, up at the top, we're anticipating about $86.1 million. That is a decrease of $17.3 million, about almost 17%. But like I said earlier, almost every budget and every finance report has a story. The story behind this is it's going to be the decreases are mainly in two different funding sources. It's going to be in child care, specifically in the COVID-related money, and it's going to be in our WOA. We actually received less WOA. So we're going to go through details, but you're going to see that being the theme as we go through that. So we'll start with child care funding here. Overall, child care, we're expecting about $64.9 million. That is a decrease of over $15 million or 19%. But like I said, if you go down there and look at some of the detail below it, you'll see where it says COVID-19, that's a $15.2 million decrease. So the good news is there, our normal and reoccurring or at-risk funding is, yeah, you show a little bit of a decrease there, but the primary reason is we received about $1.3 million of money right here at the end of the fiscal year that they thought we might be going over due to the additional COVID. So they gave us some extra money. In reality, it didn't get allocated because we weren't going to spend it this year. So that's a little bit misleading. Again, that $1.3 showed up at the end of the year. When you compare one year to the other, yeah, we did take a decrease, but it's going to roll forward, and we'll use it in 2021 as carryover. So I guess the message is there, our normal and reoccurring funding is going to stay pretty close. We're not going to experience a big variance there. The variance is in our COVID money, that $15 million. Again, this is subject to some change. This is as of today. If this continues on and we have some spikes in COVID, we may crank the money back up again to start doing some of these COVID-related expenditures. But as of right now, that's the big decrease is the COVID-19 money of $15 million. So as we go down below there at the bottom of the screen, we get into our other core funding. That's other than childcare. It's all considered core, but for these particular slides. But I try to split out childcare separately just because it's so large and so unique. So our other core funding, which is mainly, like I said, our WOA, our TANF, SNAP, ES, all those type grants. You can see we're expecting a decrease there as well. Overall funding about $19.5 million, a decrease of $1.4 million. As we go to the next slide, you're going to see the same, what I mentioned, what I go. Sheree, if we go to the next slide. As you go down, the first section is the new funding. Going down about $1.6 million, you see the WOA. There's the decrease right there, $1.5 million. So there's some other ins and outs of those other grants I mentioned. But that's the primary reason for the decrease is just the board. It's based on a formula we get each year from those grants, and we just receive less money this year. And so there's the primary reason for the other core funding decrease. As you see down below, we got some carryover that's a little bit extra, $270,000 of carryover than previously what was reported last year. There's some ins and outs there. But, again, the big story is there, the decrease of the WOA of $1.5 million. All right, Sheree, if we go on to the next slide. All right, our discretionary programs, those are the ones, if you'll remember, that typically we don't expect each and every year, but you can see we're expecting about $1.6 million, a decrease of over almost $400,000 or 19%. And so here's some of these grants we talked about. The WO Alternative Funding, we got about $450,000 in this. They sent it to us back in 2019. It ends here this next summer in 2021. We allocated some to Equus. They spent about $200,000 of it on customer training, sending them to schools and colleges. But the balance, we'll move forward as carryover. So we'd spent some of it. So that's the main reason for the decrease. So the balance we're going to spend this next year, and we actually have it in the board's budget, the rest of it to develop projects for in 2021. And then RECI there, that's a grant we received. It was going to decrease over $239,000. That RECI, just to give you a reference point, that stands for Reemployment Services and Eligibility Assessment. So we got a little bit less this year in that. I may move that to a core funding next year. That's been showing up the last couple of years. So we have received less of that. And then there's that new grant we just mentioned, Apprenticeship Texas grant for the Bombardier and training some of those some of the trainees there. So that was $120,000. So those net out to approximately that $370,000 decrease. All right. So what I'd like to do now, the next section is just what are we going to do with this money? We're talking about all the money that's going to be available. What are we going to do with it? So I'm going to divide it up between the first thing is going to be with the board staff and centralized functions or the board, like I said. And then the last section will be Equus and our subrecipients, how much is going there to operate our child care centers and our workforce centers. So first of all, let's start, like I said here, with the board's budget. I'll be asking actually at the end of this I'll be asking the board to vote on this number right here. You're seeing at the top, $15,842,777. So that's, again, that's the board, all the staff, centralized functions, as opposed to anything we're passing down. So this is an increase. It's about a $1.6 million or 11.6% increase. Again, there's a story behind this. The story on this is this. Typically, as the board over the years, when we've had increases, usually it's been primarily related to additional staff. And that's not the case this time. As we get into this, you'll see the staff is not experiencing there's a little increase, but it's not significant. We're not adding any FTEs, not significant there. The increase is going to be primarily due to projects and programs that I refer to as primarily program staff or program delivery related, meaning it's not for our staff. It's not for staff related costs. It's primarily for projects that are assisting our workforce centers, assisting customers, assisting program delivery type stuff. And we'll get into those, but that is the difference budget is. You're not going to see, personnel is not the primary reason for this. It's primary program delivery related items. So let's go ahead and go through these right quick. Personnel, you'll see for salaries, fringe, and indirect, total budgeted cost, $7.7 million. That's a slight increase, $280,000 or 3.8%. As far as FTEs, we're funding about 62.9 FTEs. That is actually a little bit of a decrease by about 0.4, about almost half of an FTE decrease. And you'll see the two below there that make that up. We had a communications coordinator that was shared amongst several COG departments. Actually, that position wasn't going to be funded this next year. Workforce was funding about 0.3 FTEs of that. So that's the contributor to that particular decrease. And then the fiscal manager decrease. That's Stephen Davis works for us, does a great job, does a lot of our accounting reporting, a lot of analytical work. He's actually going to start helping some other departments at the COG. So we're just moving about 10% of his cost over to other COG departments. It'll save workforce about 0.1 FTE there. So that's the decrease on that. Sheree, as we go to the next slide, you can, I mentioned the $280,000 increase in personnel. And so here's some of the contributing factors. We had a 2% budget merit built into that. We had certain staff promotions and salary adjustments, and then a fringe benefit rate increase from 47.2% to 49.3%. So again, those all contributed primarily to that 3% increase to our personnel cost. All right, if we continue down, Sheree, to our next slide. Excuse me. All right, child care quality program delivery. You heard me mention that when we're talking about our grant definitions. So, excuse me, just a little bit of background on this. We're expected to receive, this is a grant, a child care grant we receive. It's separate from the other child care grants. We're expected to receive approximately, it's about $1.7 million for this particular grant this year. So what do we do with that money? Well, we have about 13 staff at the COG that work on this grant as mentors and other top staff that essentially what they're doing, when you really boil it down, is they're trying to help our child care centers increase or improve their quality of their services. And so, like I said, a lot of them are out there in those centers, well, not the centers, but the child care centers, and they be helping them and just as mentors, working with them and improving their quality. We will use, but some of the money we're used for, I break out this line item separately. So after we pay the 13 staff and their travel and any equipment they need and all that, we have what's remaining, what I call child care quality program delivery. And what that is, that's a subcomponent of this quality. And this is what we're using to actually spend on those child care centers for things like curriculum development, additional equipment, maybe playground equipment or other type things, staff development for selected staff within those child care centers. So as you can see, that's projected to be $341,000. That's an increase of about $112,000. We actually, as I was preparing the budget this year, for various reasons, we didn't need as much money for the quality staff's rent, travel, and staff development, so I could put about another $73,000. Towards that particular project. And then also we had some unallocated funds in 2020 that we got some additional funds. They're all fully getting allocated in 21. So there was some additional money there between those two is a primary reason for the increase on that for that quality program delivery. So Sheree, if we go to the next slide. So workforce center infrastructure, that's a major cost for us. And what I'm referring to there, you can see it's about $2.2 million. An increase of over $123,000 or 5%. But what that encompasses is this is the funds to support our workforce centers. We have 11 fully functional workforce centers. We share one with Tarrant and a 12th, but as far as full workforce centers, we're supporting 11 of them. And those are the things like rent, utilities, janitorial, postage, copier, maintenance, all those things that you need to support the infrastructure of a workforce center. So that increase there, we got a couple things going there for COVID related reasons. We always have janitorial that shows up at night and does some cleaning, but for COVID related reasons, we want to do some additional cleaning. So we're planning for day porter services to come in. I've got about 4.5 months budgeted. It's $89,000. That'll get us through a little past January, and that'll, again, that's for all services to have not only the janitorial at night, but day porter services to be cleaning throughout the day. So that's that. That's about 89,000. And then I mentioned earlier, we'll be moving a new center in Denton. Denton's our largest center. We've got a 10-year lease there that's been approved. Construction is underway. They think that's going to be ready around the April 2021 timeframe. So we'll be moving to that location. It's a larger center. We were in a center that's 20,000 square foot. We're going to 26,700. So it's a larger center. So we've got a little bit for this year, the portion that's going to be in this year's budget. We got a little bit of extra rent utilities there, 58,000. So between those two is the primary reason for the infrastructure increase. And again, we'll be integrating approximately 21 BR staff within that center as we move in. And we've got well over 100, about 105 or so child care and workforce center staff already there. So it's going to be our largest center by far. Professional services encompass several things here. We got an increase. A lot of times we refer to this as contracted services, but on here it's professional services, about almost $2 million, an increase of $389,000 or 25%. I've got a few of the primary line items that was called the primary reason for the increase there. We actually just started it in 2000, a website redesign, and we just started the beginnings of that 2020, but a $60,000 increase there to finish that in 21. Mystery shopper services to just assess our customer service out at our workforce centers. So we used to do this years ago. It's probably been about 12, 14 years or so since we've done that. So $100,000 increase there. Some consulting services for strategic planning. We have $100,000. And then those performance incentive awards. I mentioned them earlier. We have two right now that go through 2021. Combine those two awards, $105,000. We'll be developing projects for that. TWC will have to approve that, but we'll be using those funds in 21 as well. So if we go on to the next slide, Sheree, equipment projected cost about $714,000, increase of about $205,000 or 40% increase. Almost all that increase, we're planning on replacing a large portion of our workforce center computers and the related equipment that goes with that during 21. So as you can see, that's the vast majority of that increase is new computers and screens and all the things that go with the computer. Sheree, if we go to the next slide. So here's special projects. I talked about it a little bit in the expenditure report. Excuse me one second. Let me get a drink of water here. My voice is gone. So, like I mentioned, we planned on moving our Denton Workforce Center. It's under construction. Should be done around April. So this whole special project here is related to Denton. That's $650,000. That's an increase of $500,000 from last year's. But it's, like I said, to move Denton, I've got it broken down below between workforce center staff and VR staff. We'll talk a little bit about that, but those include things to move them. As you can imagine, moving an operation that big, all the furniture, movers, telephone, electrician, data line, security systems, audio visual, all those things. The furniture is one of the primary reasons for the additional money. It was getting to the point we were about needing to replace those, and so we decided to do it when we moved. We have to replace those periodically. We try to, get them to last as long as we can, but, eventually you just can't clean them anymore. You got to replace some of those stuff. So that's the vast majority of that cost. But what I mean between the workforce center and VR, so workforce center staff, they've currently, like I said, have about 105 staff out there sitting in our current center. So about $500,000, I think, will get them their furniture and movers, electricians, everything to move them over. And then the VR staff, they're currently at another location in Denton, but to get them moved over there to this, the VR component of TWC will give us this money. They'll provide us the money, but it's coming out of our budget. We'll coordinate it, we'll pay for it, and then they'll fund us with it. So this $150 will come from them to cover the move. I'll have to supply detail back up, and we'll do a contract amendment. But so anyway, that's the reason I wanted to. It is in our budget, but they'll actually reimburse us for that as we incur cost for that move. Okay, so that's it for us as a board. the final step here is to talk about our subrecipient. I'll stop for just a second. Any questions on this for the board's budget before I move on to Equus? Okay, then I'll quickly finish with Equus. So Sharif would go to the next one. So again, I call this program delivery. Again, they won both.
Hey, Randy?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I couldn't get my finger in the trigger here to pull the mic button. Back on the pay slide, if you wouldn't mind,
personnel.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Let me just ask a general question before we get to that. And this is probably for a future board, session and discussion. The proposed budget slide that you have, that just has the flow of money from Washington, Texas to local.
Right.
I think it would be informative for us to understand the process for budget input. In other words, all of these departments are part of the president's budget.
Right.
And where or how does the state of Texas or anybody for that matter provide input to the budget? And I'm not asking for an answer right now.
Okay.
But as we look to requirements and demands that are being unmet or whatever, you know, it begs the question of what is the input for the Department of Labor to put together their portion of the president's budget that then flows to the budget allocation. So this is a great budget allocation slide. What I think would be great for future discussion and probably in the January, February timeframe, because the budget inputs will take place after the first of the year. So that would just be, I think, good discussion to understand how do we participate in the budget build, not okay. just the budget execution.
Maybe we could do a lunch and learn or something like that, or yeah. some kind of presentation for that. We'd already talked about it. It's good timing. We'd already talked about maybe a lunch and learn for the budget in general, and we could add that component to it. I know this gets kind of involved when you don't work in it every day, just to show how all this comes together. So maybe we could make that one presentation.
Yeah. Okay. So from the previous, I would say now to the pay personnel cost side.
Okay.
You showed us in the last year's budget that we had $412,000 in salary savings.
Right.
And then here we're showing a $280,000 increase in personnel costs. So one question is, are those numbers related in any way? Are those salary savings used to personnel costs? Let me just ask that as the first question.
Okay, so great question. Salary savings in 2020. So when we have attrition and other salary savings, typically what we do is if it's early enough in the year, we typically identify other projects that we could use that. If we can move that to help finish another project, if that's not the case, the vast majority of that becomes carryover money. The savings becomes carryover money. And so when you hear me talk about carryover, you got to remember what supports those staff are primarily those core funding sources I mentioned, childcare, WOA, TANF, SNAP. So all of those pay for a piece of it. So any savings we have, most all of our core grants, all but about one of them, they last longer than a year. So we can recapture that in the form of carryover. It comes into the next year, and we can utilize that carryover to fund customers or operations or whatever, but it will come forward if we don't use it for other projects within that year. It'll go forward as carryover.
Okay, so it could be used for personnel costs.
It could. So you can see, like you mentioned here, our personnel costs going up. So I don't disseminate when I bring in carryover. I typically don't. I just put it in the pot of money, and then we disseminate the total pot to the different projects. But you're right, that carryover, it could fund any of our projects in the next year. Like I said, typically most of the time we try to make sure that carryover goes to more participant related services, but that there's no rule for that, meaning, you know, going down to customers or program delivery down on our workforce centers. But again, there's no rule that it has to happen that way.
Okay. So my second question on the next slide with the staffing causes for increased cost.
Right.
You don't mention pay increase.
Sherry, could you go to the next slide, please?
Yeah, so merit is not a pay increase as far as a base pay increase across the board. Is there a cost of living increase that's factored into the staff salaries across the board in this budget?
Well, there is, and it may be just semantics here. What I'm calling merit, it may be I need to clarify that. So it's exactly what you just said. So there's a 2% availability for as staff come up for their reviews. They're throughout the year. We don't do it all at the first year. So as on your anniversary date, you come up for your review with your manager, and at that time, a merit, what I call a merit or a pay increase, is determined at that time. So if a manager does the review with you and says, you know, I think, you know, you're going to get a 2% pay increase, it begins that next pay cycle and it continues. So it truly is a pay increase. I call it a merit. That may be just a semantic type thing, but it truly is a pay increase.
Okay, you're not answering my question. I'm sorry to belabor the point here, but for example, the federal government this year is projected to get a 1% pay increase. There's a merit system in addition to that.
Okay,
the state of Texas is not anticipating any pay increase, and okay. I don't know of any state agencies that are having merit increases. So my question is, does the budget include a salary increase across the board plus merit increase, or is this just 2% of what the entire salary
yes.
total that is available to distribute on a merit-based increase?
Yes, it's the latter of what you just said. There's not a separate pay increase separate from this. It is what you just said there at the end. It's a 2% calculated on the salaries as of October 1, a 2% pool that's available for merit as the staff come up for their reviews, but there's not an additional pay raise separate and above from that.
Okay.
Let me jump in here just a second if I might. So that is a 2% budget, but this is a competitive. It's based upon your performance. It's not automatic, and 2% is what we budget. And so we wouldn't exceed that in any case, but we would be treating staff based upon their merit reviews. And if you look at last year's budget, I think it was 3%. So we did lower it, and that is a recognition of the time that we are in. Those of you that were here back during the recession, you know, we went 3 years without pay increases, without any merit budget. So this is one of the things that that we use to keep good staff, and it's part of our what we do in terms of using as a recruitment tool. So it's not as rich as it was last year, but leadership, Mr. Eastland and Mr. Mercer, thought long and hard about this and decided to go with a 2% across the entire agency. So that means 2% of our budget is available for performance-related increases.
Kenny, can I follow up on your question, please?
Yeah.
So, and it goes back to probably back to David. So the 2% is a total figure, so that gives whatever dollar amount that is. Would any individual employee get more than a 2%?
That could happen. And so if you have an overperforming individual, it might trend above 2%. If you have an underperforming individual, it might trend below 2%.
So a follow-on to all of that would be, what would be the maximum pay increase you would give to any individual employee?
Well, that is... Mr. Eastland has delegated to each of the department directors authority to go up to 5% without his approval. That will be very rare. and it takes a lot of justification for those. Even if I'm going above 2% this year, I will probably engage leadership just to be sure that we are, you know, respecting the intent of the limitation on merit increase.
You guys okay. Hear me?
And then a question then back for Randy, or you, David, is of the 3% total from last year, how much of that was unspent?
Randy, we have Mr. Eastland that's trying to make a comment.
Okay.
I don't know if you can hear me or not.
Just barely.
Yes, I was going to state, Mr. Bristol, that I don't know if we're going to go with to the full 5%. It may be the 4% would be the max. That's going to be pretty rare that we would do something that high. Somebody's going to have to really perform very well to accomplish that kind of an increase. But now you can go back to Randy's question. Do we have any money left over from last year?
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't have that figure in front of me. I will tell you this. We're still in the process of finishing. We have several staff that had reviews late in the year, September. I think David actually is one of them. That's their anniversary dates late in the year. So we're still in progress on those. I can get that figure for you. I don't have it in front of me. But, again, those typically because just the way our staff were hired, workforce has a lot that are later in. I say a lot. We have quite a few that tend to be later in the year, so those are still in progress right now.
Thank you, Kenny, for letting me hijack your question.
Yeah, I just one other simple question: is the 2% based on what is it based on? And again, I go back to the federal budget projection of 1%. I mean, do you use cost of living index or do you just what's the basis for the 2%?
It is primarily trying to stay competitive with cities, the engineering firms, and other consulting firms tend to be where we lose our middle level employees. Also, we've done some surveys with our cities, and we're finding all ranges from 0 up to 3.5%. Many of them 3% range, so we feel like we're staying below that. But we are part of the state pay plan, and trying to fit our people into that is very difficult because the jobs that the state has versus the jobs that we have are very different. And so we're sort of depressed in the amount of money that we can pay to begin with. So within that range that we do have, we're trying to move some people up. And I would say for the most part, many people who will benefit from this are going to be in our mid-level type job, and that's where we tend to see the most of our turnover. But you're exactly right. It is not based on what has been the cost of living of 1% or not. It's really that we are behind many of our competitors as far as the amount of salary that we are able to put forward for our employees.
Okay, well, I'll just make one more comment and then I'll get out of the way. You know, I've dealt with this before where there's this reluctance to actually address pay structure from a what should people be paid in an attempt to try to keep up with it at a 2% or 3% pace over time. And I mean, what I think the board needs to consider with staff is actually visibility on what the pay structure is, and that be a separate item from what is a merit system and how are funds generated to support a merit system to ensure that there's competitive pay for staff, because that's one issue. How annual bonuses or merits are provided is more tied to the physical realities that we face. And so those are things that, you know, I just think are important for us to consider in the budget approval, keeping employees pay at pace with the private sector to provide for competitive hiring and promotion is very important. But we also have to, you know, maintain fiscal realities of the year that we're in, and the budgets in the state of Texas that are being slashed and significantly so. So I just thank you for your input on that, and just provide those comments for the board to consider. So thank you.
Kenny, along that line is also we should look at as a comprehensive package, not just in the salaries. As we discussed at the ONA Executive Committee meeting, some of the benefit packages are then offset to create higher than the private sector so that the staff can actually, it's a total competitive package. So I think we should not just look at salaries, but the overall comp package. So with that, we're still, Randy, I know you asked for questions at this point here before you continued on. So I'd like to kind of follow up a little bit on the special projects section. And if you could just address how the budget money for the special projects then is in support of the board's priorities.
Let me make sure I understand.
Do you have a slide on that, Randy?
I'm not sure I understand exactly. So you're asking about our move, our didn't move for special projects, the $650,000 you're referring to that?
No, I'm talking about the website development, how those three specific fairly large items support the board's priorities, and then what input we did to get to that.
So Sharif, we'll go forward a few slides here.
I heard at the executive committee meeting was a secret shopper.
Hey, David.
Yes.
I'm having difficulty hearing your response, David.
All right. I'll get as close as I can to this thing. All right. Is that any better?
Right there, Sheree.
Some.
Okay. So what I heard in the joint executive and oversight and accountability meeting was there were three that stood out. That was the secret shopper amount that we put in the budget, one for strategic planning, and of course the finish up of our website. So let me I'll make some high level comments, and then I'd like for the senior program managers over those particular requests, which most of them are in Christina's shop. But so we secret shopper is just what you have probably heard it is. It's where you develop a, and these are all subject to procurement, number one. These basically are budget placeholders for you to give us permission to develop a package to go out and procure these services, although the website we've already procured. But like for secret shopper, many years ago, we had that type of a program. TWC had a version of it, but it kind of went away. And what it does is it provides resources to have people clandestinely go into our workforce centers as clients, engage the interaction with center staff, both on just, you know, welcoming and greeting them, responding to particular service types of requests, what grants they might be available to participate in. The strategic planning, we did a very small one as a small purchase this year, and that was how we got TIP strategies. And that's a specific engagement for helping facilitate us through the strategic plan process with our core issues that we're going to look at. And they have been facilitating those meetings that many of y'all have been participating in. But we feel there's a need for a longer range assistance with our longer range strategic plan as the board decides many of these things, like you've heard about what Colonel Weldon was and you were talking about at Tarleton, how we participate in those. So we feel like there is a bigger picture out there that we want to get to. Again, this would be a competitive procurement. And then finally, our website. We are carrying over. We budgeted for this last year, and COVID kind of turned us upside down, and we were tasked with other things than working on the website redesign. So there was actually carryover money in the budget from last year to this year. So what you're seeing in the budget is not an addition to what you saw last year. It's finishing up what we didn't spend last year. So, and certainly, you know, when I think about websites and I think about social media and all of those, we do need to be doing more social media. To me, the social media gets us out of there in the public, and it's kind of the hook to get them back in, and then that hook draws them to our website and increases traffic there, and website is where that information is provided. So that's kind of high level. I'll turn it over to Christina to just touch briefly on those about what our plans are.
Good morning. I guess to tag on to what David has already shared, David Bristol, I think your question was, how does it relate to our priorities? So brand management has been one of our current focus areas / key priorities in the strategic plan, and we feel that this is an extension of it. This is the way many people will experience us for the first time. The current website is 5 years old, and it can use some updating. Additionally, we are changing the platform that it is on. NetCog has adopted a different platform, which meets all of the security criteria, which is very important for some of the information that we may be collecting on our website, because we are currently having discovery meetings to brainstorm how we can increase the functionalities of our website to make it more interactive and not just a place that you come to read information at, to make it more useful for our customers. Mystery shopper services, again, that comes, you know, that will hit brand management, and it also contributes to community partnerships, which is one of the key priorities we have been recently discussing. We've talked about collaborators and partners and increasing our outreach and partnership opportunities, and we want to be sure that when we do that, when we ask our partners to refer their customers to our workforce centers and to our services, that we are delivering on a service level that is reflective of our values and the way that we have presented ourselves to these partners. Our workforce centers and childcare services would probably be those who most interact with the public, and they do it under the name of Workforce Solutions for North Central Texas. We outsource this service, but to the public, they are Workforce Solutions for North Central Texas. As Randy stated, we have not done this since 2005. It's been 15 years. And as we've been adding to our staff at the board level on communications, this arose as an issue that could use some attention. We'd like to have some objective analysis of what our customers are experiencing when they go into the workforce center. So it just won't be, you know, are people friendly? It will be, were the services effective? We have multiple customer segments that would need to be addressed. Randy mentioned we have about 25 different grants going at any time. So we want to make sure that when a customer experiences this, they don't have to worry about how to navigate those 25 grants that we have, and that they feel that our staff is able to meet their needs, that they know what the next step is, maybe even looking around at the facilities to ensure that they are welcoming to all of our customers, and also our employer customer bases. Add to that a layer of virtual services, which we had been planning to start providing and have really been fast-forwarding that initiative because of the current events of the pandemic. So we also want to look at how those services are being delivered and how we might be able to improve them. So we want an unbiased evaluation of the customer experience in our centers, and also opportunities for improvement to be uncovered. We want to make sure that we're putting our best foot forward, especially during a pandemic. We did experience this during the 2008 recession, and then, you know, we've been, I'm sure you've all been hearing about it in the news. It is a very stressful time for a lot of people, and a lot of people having a difficult time right now might find themselves in our workforce centers. So we really want to be sure that we're able to meet their needs and live up to our mission, vision, and values. David alluded to the fact that we haven't procured this. The scope has not been written out completely. So although we are budgeting for it, it's just a plan. It's a placeholder for these funds so that they're available for us once procured. We have the funding available to execute a contract upon NETCOG's approval. It will have to go to NETCOG's board for approval, and they will ensure that we met our procurement requirements. $100,000 does sound like a lot, but when you consider that we have not done this in 15 years, and we are also looking at a budget to allocate nearly $70 million on our two largest contractors, that's not really a lot. It's a huge system that we're trying to assess and evaluate. And we don't want it to be just on anecdotal information of what someone might communicate to us that they experienced. We want a true analysis by someone who knows what they should be expecting and goes in there in the mindset, in a good mindset. You know, you never know. There's always two sides to a story. So this is the way we felt would be the most appropriate way to accomplish that.
Okay. Thank you, Christina. I'll continue with that with two questions then. And it's the first one is, which one of the board's committees made those recommendations?
These are not made by the board's committees. So part of what we are charged with doing at the board staff level, you know, we talk to you about performance measures every month, but the reality of that is that we manage a contractor who is tasked with achieving those. And our job is to facilitate, to foster an environment where they can be successful. So our job is oversight and planning. These are the types of things that we feel are necessary to accomplish the board's objectives, as we've heard in our recent communications with you.
So I'll put out there that then perhaps we should run those through one of the committees in advance to the actual budget presentation. Then the second thing I'd like to actually throw out there is I don't disagree with you on the needs for any of these things and the brand management and everything. But let's address the big elephant that's been in the room for the past 6 months. Our brand management is getting hammered. Ed Cerna's having to go on TV all the time going, yeah, hey, I'm sorry y'all can't get through to the TWC and get anyone, whether you go email, voicemail, whatever it is. And none of those priorities seem to be in there or how we're addressing that. So that's where I've got a little bit of a concern. And I realize that this board individually can't control all of that. But I guess that's no one really that has talked to me. Everyone who's talked to me about it has said, can you help me just get through to a voice in there? All right. So those are brand management issues that are way more pressing than a mystery shopper coming in my opinion. I don't know the rest of the boards, but that's kind of my two cents worth. So thank you and I'll throw it back to the rest of the team.
And let me respond there, Christina, to David's question. And absolutely, TWC has taken quite a bit of heat for the UI response, you know, albeit in an unprecedented time when claims have just, you know, skyrocketed. So they have actually hired I guess you would call it a PR firm, for lack of a better term, but somebody to help them with their messaging at the state level, which is where a lot of this needs to happen, as you referred to. So they will be using that. We've already had some conversation with them, all the boards, not just us, but we will have input into some of that. So as they develop what they're going to do at the state level, I want us to look at what they're doing, and maybe we can complement it at the local level and maybe a little more clarification for our board area. But you're right. Some of these things are just, they're out of the local board control, but we do have input into what the state's doing. So I think the state has has realized that they have a problem. And so they are starting to work on that to address it.
And this is Roz, piggybacking on David Bristol. When we look at Mystery Shopper, it is for the workforce centers at this point only. And what I'm seeing in the budget is that's an $11 million, not the whole amount with the child care centers. So that's what we're really looking at. If we mystery shop with the child care centers, I understand. But otherwise, this is strictly the workforce centers.
So Christina, was there a plan to have a component of the mystery shopper in the child care arena?
No, that actually does not fall within our purview. And Kelly can speak to that a little bit more. We were assessing the services provided by our subrecipient, which is child care services and workforce center operation. I did not catch, Roz, I didn't understand what you meant about $11 million.
Non-child care, which is, I'm assuming, workforce centers. We have the lion's share being for child care, but if we're looking at workforce centers, our allocation for that looks like it's about $11 million.
We allocate the funding in total to Equus, or our subrecipient, to manage the delivery of those services and incur those costs. So we want to be sure that the service delivery and customer experience is appropriate to manage an operation of that size.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. I'm just saying that we are looking at the centers only, and we're not looking at the expediency of getting a child into a child care center, into a child care place. We're really just looking at how the centers are going to operate, where the lion's share of our budget is child care.
Well, this is a great discussion, Roz. Thank you for bringing it up. What we will be doing is developing a scope of work. So we really haven't settled on how much we could spend or how much we could allocate to a child care secret shopper versus a workforce. So we will take that under consideration. We, if you would like, before we issue that RFP, we can come back to you with the scope of work so you can see how we're allocating, how we would get that feedback on the child care side as well as the workforce side. Would that be beneficial?
That sounds great, but I would like to see it from committee form, whether it's done with in concurrence with like Elaine or Anna. You know, I don't want to just be the one person. I don't want to be the one to say, yes, that's great. I want it to be with consideration from some people.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll take it to the committees and we'll probably take it to multiple committees, so we'll hit the widest group of board members.
Then final comment on those special projects is a question of how much have we spent previously on the website redesign?
Randy, what did we spend this year?
This year we spent about $37,000 so far in 2020. Like I said, there – we had budgeted a lot more than that, but it got delayed. So we spent about 30, 37. So the vast majority of the project expenditures are going to be during 2021.
So how much did we budget and what's our carryover for that?
So we budgeted 100 in 20. And like I said, we spent in the 30 range. So the budget for 21 is 160, which is that's the 60,000 you're seeing. So we will, again, we won't exceed the 160 project. If we spent the full 160 and the 30, you know, we're talking about roughly 190, give or take, if we stay, you know, if we don't spend any more this year, then spend our 160.
I am not a website expert, but for close to $200,000, it better make its own money and spit it out for us. So that's a lot on just a website. And so that's with that, I end my comments. Thank you.
All right. If there's no additional comments, we'll go ahead and go into our subrecipient, which is, like I said, formerly ResCare, now Equus.
Randy?
Yes.
Randy, this is Kenny. I just want to make one more observation.
Okay.
That took place in this discussion between Christina and David and David just now. I think when we look at the strategic initiatives that the board is looking at, if we're looking for labels to put within a budget to put dollar amounts against, you know, maybe it's in our best interest to not limit ourselves prematurely. And David said, hey, we'll look at the scope of work to make sure the board is okay with that. Well, why not rename these line items in the budget to align themselves with the three priorities from a policy perspective that the board has already made a statement about, and then allow the what and how is going to be done to mature itself versus short-circuiting that. I think that's what's created an uneasiness on the part of the board, is that these solutions are being presented when we're still thinking about the policies as priorities. And so I just recommend simply that we retitle some of these budget line items to make them more generic, but in line with the three policy initiatives that we've outlined, and then allow staff flexibility to bring statements of work and priorities to the board during execution that allow those discussions to be taken outside of the budget and allow the budget to move forward in a more comprehensive, you know, more generic manner. So that's just a comment.
I think that I totally agree with Kenny's comments. I think it's quite very, very good comments. And I guess I'll tag on to the website dollars here and just comment that a couple, actually. There hasn't been any mention of social media, and from our recent work on internet marketing, we're getting a lot more bang for the social media effort. You know, website is kind of a destination, where social media is more of a marketing campaign. So if we're spending money on internet and we want to draw traffic, social media is a much better way to get that. Of course, you need to have a website because that's what you're driving them to. But I would not overlook the return on investment of work in the social media area. So I have an overlying question that I put on the table during the executive committee about the 18% versus 14%. And I guess I'm going to hold that till we finish your presentation, Randy.
Okay. All right. All right. So, Sheree, if we'll go back up to, let's finish. Let's go ahead and finish. Roger, you want to go ahead and go through the rest of it and then come back to this? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we'll finish the last section. We talked about the total available revenue that I projected for 2021. We talked about how much we were going to use of that for the board's budget. And now finally, the last section, how much we've plan on disseminating to Equus, or formerly ResCare, to run our child care program and our workforce centers. So we'll go ahead and start. Sheree, I think actually we need to go back. Yeah, there we go. There we go. All right. So overall, about $69.8 million. That includes both contracts. That's about a $16.1 million decrease, or 19%. Again, you're going to see some of the same stuff here as far as the reasons for the decreases. If we start with the child care program, you see overall new and carryover money, about $58.2 million, which is a $13.7 million decrease. And if you go down to that new funding section right below it, you'll see COVID-19 money, $15.2 million decrease. So that the decrease is primarily it's COVID-related money. Our normal at-risk child care delivery system is not expecting a decrease. It's in the COVID money, which, again, was just dictated by TWC. They gave it to us in the spring, and pretty much it's we're spend what we can, the rest go back. So that's the good news. It's a little misleading when you look at the numbers saying we're decreasing 19%, but it is COVID-related money, which honestly is a good thing if it goes away and stays away. So just want to clarify that. Sheree, if we go to the next slide. So our other contract with them, I call it just workforce or non-child care, about $11.6 million in total. That'll be all those grants we mentioned that are non-child care, like WOA, TANF, SNAP, ES, all those others. And decrease about $2.5 million, over 17%. Again, you're going to see the same story. It's WOA. If you look below there, the new funding, decrease of $1.9 million. So there's where the vast majority of it is right there. So and then you see some discretionary money going down. The WA alternative, we gave them $393,000 in 2020. They spent about $200,000 of it. That grant continues through this next year. We're going to bring the rest of it up to the board level to help some fund some of the things we talked about a while ago. And so theirs is going down 100%. So there's the big decrease for them there. So Sheree, we'll finish up right quick. We do have some other subrecipients other than Equus. We talked about that new expansion grant, Apprenticeship Texas expansion grant, for the Bombardier aerostructure type services that we talked about. We're going to fund about 20% of 60% participants. So of that 120, we're planning on using about 78,000 for that. We actually haven't identified the subrecipient. I think Texas State Technical College is working with them now. So, but anyway, we'll develop that as we get all the details, but a small amount there for that'll be going to another subrecipient. Lastly, you'll see unallocated funding or contingency funding. All I mean by that is I try to hold back some money. I try not to allocate every dime. I've learned the hard way over the years. That's probably not a good idea. So I've held back 390,000 of all those various grants that we have. That's a cumulative of all those. About 390,000 pieces of that held back in each grant. So if we decide as a board later we want to use some of that, we'd have to come back to you as a board and increase our budget, or we could allocate some of it to our subrecipients, or if nothing happens, most of it will be used as carryover. But anyway, it's just a little bit of pot of contingency I hold back there. And so that's about it, Sheree. We'll go to the next slide. I have actually the that is the recommendation. But before we go to that, I think, Roger, you said you had some questions.
Well, I kind of wanted to speak to the what I referred to the other day as general and administrative going okay. From, I think it was 18%, went from 14.7 to 18.4%, if my memory serves me right.
Right, right. And so Sheree, I gave you, there's a schedule there. You might be able to shed schedule, I believe it's schedule 2. I think it'll highlight what Roger's talking about. I sent it to you yesterday, a schedule 2, a pie chart. Yeah, that's it exactly right there. Okay, so I believe, Roger, what you're referring to, I divided this out between a reoccurring cost for the board, and let me tee this up a little bit. What this pie represents in 20 and 21 is the amount of money that was allocated. It excludes unallocated funds that I'd held back, but these are the amount of funds were allocated. That's the pie. The 85.8% was what was going down to ResCare to operate our programs. These two together right here, what is that, 14.2% would be how much of the pie between these two was at the board level. And then coming into 21, you see it went down about 4.3% of the pie going to Equus, and us as a board getting about additional 4.3% of the pie. And so I'd split this out between one time and reoccurring. And all I mean by that is as we looked at those items we talked about, a lot of those were one-time cost. So meaning we're going to move Denton. That is over $600,000 or buy some computers out there or do those certain line items. I refer to those more as one-time. They're not reoccurring operational. So that's why you see a little bit of this pie split out a little bit between, you know, one time and reoccurring. But the overall message, yes, you're correct, Roger. It was going to the board's portion of the pie was going to go from, I believe, 14. I've got my notes here, 14.2% to 18.5%. So did I capture that right? Is that what you're referring to?
I think the numbers were a little different, but yeah. you're within a tenth of a percent. So I think what we're dealing with here is, I think board members are getting much more depth. I think we've got the makeup of the board, the tenure in the board. I also think staff is more thorough, structured, strategic. So the one area that we seem to talk quite a bit about, David coined the phrase, the community outreach portion. I think it would help the board identify the area that would be allocated for community outreach. You know, so you use the term operational. Well, Equus, ResCare, I mean, that's operational. There's a certain portion of board funds that I would consider to be operational and dedicated towards day-to-day tactical operations. But then there's a portion of the revenue stream that is somewhat discretionary. And I think the conversation earlier with Kenny was, hey, let's identify that and let's talk about that. And if the board consensus are specific priority areas, let's talk about how we're going to execute that. You know, looking at that pie chart, I can look at it two different ways. General and administrative has grown, which is, to a small business person, not something you want to see. On the other side of the coin, that can include community outreach dollars that are suggesting we're funding a lot more of that activity, which would be very positive. So we need to develop some kind of a working relationship where we see that, that that's coming, and we start through committee, through communications with board policy, board development. We kind of target those funds and all get on the same page as to where we're headed with that. And I really think that state statute kind of helps prime the board on the areas to look at that that we could get involved in. But I guess in finishing up my line of thought, these are all good problems. It's great that that we're having the dialogue, that we are understanding the task and the objectives, and that we're executing in areas that benefit the communities and our constituents.
I agree, and we will work toward that.
Okay, that kind of summarizes my comment on that. Any other discussion? This is an action item. We do have, I believe that would be a recommended motion on it. So if we don't have any further discussion or comments, let's talk about this motion.
Well, first question is, Roger, when does this have to be passed?
My response to that would be yes. We have to have.
When does it need to be passed? Sorry.
October 1st, the start of the fiscal year.
So, continuing on to kind of the concepts, if perhaps someone on this board, or a majority of this board chose to not vote in favor of this budget, what recourse would we have?
We would have to convene and get your input in terms of what you would like to see differently. If there's line items specifically that you would like to remove, that could certainly be done.
And we'd have to do that in the next 9 days.
Correct. Monty, I'm not speaking incorrectly there, am I?
Okay, so this is Monty, and Mike's on the line also. We have for consideration for the COG board as a whole to adopt this this budget, inclusive of the workforce, on Thursday. We've already met with the board, and we've done a preliminary overview with the finance committee, all those type of things, and then we're going to do that on Thursday. But just but regardless of that particular piece, let me just set aside in that if there is a wish by this board to look at what we do and how we do it, we can do that in parallel. There's nothing that would prohibit this or infringe on our ability to do that. So the intent of today would be if you're in agreement with the budget as a whole, for us to proceed with that as a framework, we're not going to expend all those dollars on October 1st, and we can very quickly ramp up to get your input on how this budget is going to be administrated, and then we can come in and make adjustments as needed. And if it's necessary for us to go in and amend the budget, well, then we can certainly do that. Although in most cases, I doubt that would be required to amend that budget. Hopefully that makes sense as far as, where we are today and how we can proceed. Mike, any comments from you?
Well, I think, we're sort of at a crucial point of needing to pass the budget and it determine what we can do, we can look at it. David, what are the key points that keep you hesitate to vote for the budget?
Mine is more, it's almost a procedural thing, is that we've backed ourselves into a corner. And so a board, even the oversight committee from last week, if they wanted substantial changes, we didn't vote on it last week. We actually pushed it off to this one here. So my experience in previous municipal and budget workshops is that there's a committee input where then we don't get backed into, we have no choice but to really pass the budget as presented by staff. That's where I feel that we have put this board into. And that may be our own fault because in the past we've kind of, it's been pushed along and without all of the inputs. So what I would actually say is that we should have this process done much sooner in our budget year and get to where we can not get backed into a corner. That's my opinion as one vote on this.
And David, we have actually attempted to do that about 4 or 5 years ago. I wanted to bring a preliminary view of the budget to the board in July. And the problem is we don't know everything that we're going to get on the funding side. It's hard to develop a budget if you don't know what your revenues are and what you're going to be budgeting against. And there's just so much of it that comes so late in the process from the state that, it does paint us into a corner at the end, absolutely. I would love to change that. So, I mean, we're open to talk about how we might try to do that in the future. It's as you can imagine, this is a lot of work to put together. And we felt like after trying that July, it was almost like we were doing double work. So we can certainly have some discussion about that. I would love to get it to you earlier. I think everybody would. It's just the reality of when we know what our revenues are going to be.
And I think that those are programmatic and goes back perhaps Colonel Weldon's question about how much input does the state have in the law that really establishes a workforce program, and then how much does the Appropriation Committee in Congress actually the state in turn allocate the dollars that they get. And I think, it, as you mentioned, that's a good lunch and learn. I think there would be some things, though, that we could talk about with the board without having to know all of our revenues, because they are programmatic for the most part. There's a little bit of discretionary revenue outside what the federal government funds the state. So, I am sorry that we have followed past practice in this budget process, and I would ask that you approve it, but I think that you made a strong point, and we'll certainly adhere to it, that as we go into the next budget cycle, that we would try to get to you earlier and talk about some of the aspects of it that where you perhaps do have more say in how dollars are spent.
So, Roger, this is Kenny. Can I just make a small suggestion,
yes.
Possibly?
Please.
I think to Monty and Mr. Eastland's point, there is a large portion of this budget that is non-discretionary. It is allocated, and, I mean, we've got to approve the budget, but it's based on the grant dollars that flow and the amounts that they flow. That said, there is a portion, and I'm going to mention three areas that is discretionary, and I think it's been a large part of our discussion toward the end of this discussion. The professional services, $260,000, the $390,000 unallocated, and then there's $73,000 that was increased, a transfer from personnel support categories, rent, travel, staff development that was put against the child care quality program delivery. If you take that total, it's $723,000. The ability for that all to be, that sounds like in the big scheme of a 70 something million dollar budget, that's not a lot of money. But if somebody will write me a personal check for $720,000, I'll take it. It is a lot of money when you're looking at trying to do things within the board. And so, I mean, one way of looking at where I'm going with this suggestion is the last line item of the budget could be an unallocated contingency fund of $723,000 that would be the summation of the 390 plus the 260 plus the 73. And what that does is put the money in a general account to allow the board to work with the staff on how it's executed and doesn't predetermine, you know, which area it is. Now, there's other areas maybe that could be looked at, but that pulls in $750,000 to at least let the board, look at the priorities and how these very, very limited funds, when you get down to the end of the day, there's very limited discretionary money in this budget. And so putting that together in a single line item, I think gives a compromise here of, okay, we don't know. So let's work together on how to use a limited amount of money, moving forward with some of these critical priorities, like was mentioned earlier. So that's just a suggestion and maybe a way to compromise with what's been discussed here.
Okay, so, Randy, just kind of brainstorming here. If this motion was made as written, but the last sentence changed to be with a small percentage designated as unallocated and contingency funds as $723,000, which staff will work with the board to allocate, period.
Well, then the that 15842777, that number is going to change up there because it's like Kenny mentioned, it's got professional services in there that if you want to, we would have to change the number that you're actually voting on because if we want to add the 390,000 in it, right now that 39348 of unallocated, it's not in that number you're voting on. it's outside of it. It's literally just sitting there kind of outside of everything, just as a, literally a contingency that what we would do typically is if we ever wanted to use that in the board's budget, we'd come back amendment or we'd allocate it to our subrecipient. But if we want to move that in our budget as just a overall contingency line item, that number, 15,842,777, would go up by that $390,000.
Let me ask another question. Based on the fact that you're adopting the budget with these discretionary funds included, and they're allocated to certain projects or programs, if we adopted the budget as is, then came back and looked at the areas Colonel Weldon is talking about, do we have the authority to amend the budget as far as those funds are concerned and what they're allocated to accomplish? Does that, I know our budgeting and with all the state rules and regs, it's a tough thing, but even if they adopt it as it is, let's take the $100,000 that we've got for the secret shopper. If they wanted to reallocate that to something else, is that a possibility?
Yeah, well, what I'm hearing is there may not be any other reallocation done, but I think the board members would like the opportunity to revisit that with staff before committing to it. Am I reading the comments properly? And I guess I'll throw that out to David and Kenny.
I think so. And I'll go back. I think Randy, I'll question the 15,842,777. That actually includes that $332,000 that Kenny was mentioning. So actually, technically, it reduces the 15.8 by 332 and goes into the undesignated, unallocated, and increases that.
Yes, if you want to reduce it by those, I'm assuming you're referring to those professional service line items. If you want to reduce it by that, yeah, it would. That number that y'all are approving for us as the board, centralized functions, staff, all that, would go down by that amount. And so what that would mean is we would that unallocated then would increase by that correspondingly, go from 390 to whatever that number would be. Y'all would have, if you went that route, you'd vote on a lesser number instead of 15,842. It would be that less, those professional line items that you were referring to. And then we would have to come back to you subsequently in the year and discuss it further and see if we want to amend the budget back up to include some of those or not.
I think that accomplishes what Roger, we were just saying. And Kenny, if I think I have the numbers right, it's the 260 in professional services, and then it was 73 of the allocation from I can't remember where that was from, Kenny.
Personnel.
It was in the child quality child care program delivery section.
So I get that to be.
If I might weigh in on one aspect of this that I want you to be aware of, because we started the website redesign last year, we issued an RFP and we have a contract in place with that. And it's ongoing right now. So I think we've got a commitment there that we would need to know. We need to be able to pick your brain about that very rapidly, because we can't just we've got it mapped out, much like we've got our strategic planning initiatives mapped out, and that would concern me that we're that far into it and that we would decide not to do it.
Well, I thought Randy said we've got leftover funds from the $100,000 that was allocated last year.
Okay. Right. So let's talk about that. So every year stands on its own. If we have leftover funds in one year, We approve a budget for the next year that includes everything. That includes if a project didn't get completed, you're going to move it forward into the next year's budget and to get approved there. So just because a project wasn't completed doesn't mean it automatic with it needs to be in the next year's budget and approved, or we don't have authorization. It each year stands on its own is what I'm trying to say. You got to move it forward into the next year's budget if you want to continue spending on it.
Okay, so let me, that's a stupid question. How much is the contract for the website?
Let me go back. We'll let Christina weigh in on that.
Well, while she's looking at that, Randy, is the $723,000 all professional services?
Let's go to that professional service. If we go back a few more slides, make sure we're on the same page. Okay, right. No, one more. I'm sorry. One more. Backwards. Well, it's more than one more. There we are. Okay, so those professional services, what I've got listed there, just make sure we're on the same page. Those aren't the total amounts budget. Those are the increases to those line items. And so I think here's where most of the contention was, is right here in this area, this 60, the two 100s and the 105. This area right here, I believe, is what y'all are referring to. So these are the increases to those line items. So what I'm saying is the website redesign is budgeted in total at 160. The increase compared to last year is 60, and that's where you see the 60,000 increase. The mystery shopper, there wasn't a budget last year, so that 100,000 is the full amount it was budgeted. It's 100, that whole thing was an increase. Strategic planning wasn't last year, so that whole thing, that 100,000 was budgeted. That's all an increase. But as far as the website, it was actually budgeted at 160 compared to last year, 100 is the 60 increase.
Okay, so Randy, you understand the format here. What would you recommend as far as a motion to accomplish what Kenny and David have indicated?
Well, I think, again, just the, if y'all are the specific couple of these line items here that really are causing some stress, we could reduce the number that we're going to ask you to approve by those line items, and then we could discuss it further as we come forward with committees and stuff. And if it's later on, you know, approved, we could come back with a budget amendment in 2021. But if it's just seriously just a couple of these line items that's really causing this stress, I think we could lower that in the number you approve. And again, come back and discuss it further later with an amendment.
So I'm assuming you've already got the COG budget, that this is supporting the COG budget. So
it is. So it would be a little bit different than Monty. We'd have to talk about that. So Monty, you want to chime in on that? What I'm saying is, Monty, the board's budget would decrease, but essentially pass through would increase at least temporarily. The overall would stay the same, but between the board and the pass through, there would be some fluctuation.
Well, and that's true. But one of the things that I would just mention, I think Mike mentioned it earlier, but anything that is in question here regarding the expenditure of these, particularly these professional services, quality child care, all those type of things, I still think conceptually, you pass this budget, we bring it. I mean, you're the board. And we're going to bring it back to you with here's some options, or maybe we talk to you before we go up, but we have to do procurements, we have to do contracts, we have to do all those things there. So we can, with your discretion, we can proceed with putting this budget in place. And then if we need to move money later, then we can certainly do that. The one reservation I have with amending the budget is if we come back and change it later, which we can certainly do that. It just, it's an additional step that may not even be necessary because as we bring things to the workforce board, you know, just because we approve the budget doesn't mean we're going to spend the money exactly that way, particularly if you expressed a reservation.
Yeah, no, I think we're all in agreement there, and I haven't heard any opposition to approving the budget, but we need a suggestion on how to add to that motion in terms that everybody can agree upon, where you agree to come back on those items.
So Randy, this is Monty. If we take the mystery shopper and that, and it's $100,000 increase, but what's the total dollar value of that?
Well, that one actually worked out. There was no budget last year, so it is $100,000. Every bit of it was an increase.
So if we took a hundred, we're going to do this on the fly. If we do the mystery shopper here for $100,000, the website redesign, that's 160. Right. But we have a commitment already on the buy. I'm going to put an asterisk beside that one. And then the strategic planning services, $100,000 there.
Right.
What was in the budget for that already?
There was nothing. That strategic planning, there was nothing last year. So when you're comparing, the whole amount is an increase. So there's $100,000 in the 2021 budget. The only one of those four, that website redesign, there's actually $160,000 budgeted compared to $100,020, which that's where you get your $60,000 increase, but it was $160,000 budgeted. Those other three, those are all new. So what you see as an increase is the amount that was budgeted in 21.
So David, a quick question in regards to the website redesign. The $60,000 increase, inclusive of $100,000 baseline, so that's $160,000 in total. Are you telling me you already have a contract in place where we have a commitment on that? And so, what is the amount that we have discretion as far as that's concerned that we can't get out of?
Hi, if I could jump in just a bit, our current contract amount is $179,000 for the website. We also have an existing engagement with TIP Strategies that we did not complete this fiscal year because of the pandemic's delay, and that contract is about $50,000. To be safe, I'd like to secure $30,000 to finish that in FY21, and then the $70,000 we could just put towards that line item that we could talk to you about as it develops.
Okay. So Christina, what I'm hearing you say is that of the $160,000 that we have for the website next year, are you telling me that $60,000 is discretionary on that?
Am I telling you that $60,000 is discretionary?
No, I see, Christina, you were talking about two different things. TIPS is the strategic planning services. That's that third line when she's talking about TIPS.
Okay.
So we need to make sure those are separated. So, Christina, our contract with the website, I think that's what Monty's referring to first. So
okay. The line item that I put in what I submitted in budget preparation was $160,000 to cover our FY21 expenditures towards the website.
But is that one, maybe I'm misunderstanding that one, I can't remember. We have a contract approved for how much on that?
The current contract, not to be confused with what we will spend in FY21, is for $179,000, and it will expire at the end of fiscal year 21, September 30th.
We've spent about 37, so They've got a contract for 179. We've spent 37 of it during 20.
So you got 142,000 left on that contract. Is that what
right.
you're saying?
Okay. Right.
And so do you need all 142 or can it be terminated for lack of a better term?
We budgeted what we thought we needed to complete our website development. I know it says redesign, but it really is a whole new website that we're developing, and yes, we need it.
Okay. So as a side note, and I'm a little bit out of my field, but I do want to tell you that we've been redoing all the websites for the agency, and one big component of this is in regards to security. And we have a security thread that we're running throughout the whole agency on that. And I'm not saying all this is for security, but there is a significant component of that because we've been updating all of our websites across the agency and trying to maintain that the appropriate level of security on that. I don't have enough background information to really give you the proper insight into that. So. Okay. All right. So let me sum this thing up. If I take the $100,000 for the to bake in discretionary for the mystery shopper, if it sounds like the website redesign, you need the whole amount in order to complete that website redesign. So if we just put that to the side for the moment, and then the strategic planning. You said you need 30,000 of that?
To finish the current engagement, yes. Okay.
Well, that would be 70,000 discretionary. So I've got my shopper of 100,000. I've got the strategic planning of 70,000. Have $390,000 of unallocated from before. And then also the quality child care, that was 73,000. Is that okay to put that in the...
All right. So let's talk just a second about that quality and make sure everybody understands. We that is a contract we get separate. It's all a direct charge. So we have to spend those funds on quality related services. We don't have a choice. It's not like these other grants these other projects we're talking about. They're cost pooled. We pay for various grants with various grants. That quality, we keep it in our contract. We got about 1.7 allocated to it this year. We have to spend it on quality services. So I don't know that we have a lot of flexibility there with that money. I mean, it's either we're going to spend it on mentoring and staffing, sending them out to the child care centers, or we're going to do it, help them with staff development and equipment. But either way, we have to spend that on quality, child care quality activities. So there's really not a ton of flexibility there like we do with this money we're talking on this.
Correct, Randy. I would advocate that amount would be maintained to be used for quality.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. So I know it's a little confusing, but that is funded directly by a single contract that has rules with it. I just don't think we have much flexibility with it to be moving that around.
Okay.
And Randy, excuse me, the only reason I brought that up is that it says it's a transfer of funds from personnel support categories.
Right. And so
it didn't appear to be quality money. It appeared to be money that was moving from some other line.
Yeah, I should have clarified more. What I meant was the quality staff, Kelly has 13 of them. So based on this year's budget of rent and everything, I didn't quite have to use as much money as the previous year to fund them, the quality staff on those items. I could save a little bit there for various reasons and move it to the equipment staff development component of quality. But it was all within quality. It's just moving it between line items within quality. I know that's just a little bit different, but yeah, I should have clarified that better.
Okay, so basically we're talking about the website and the mystery shopper. Is that correct?
No,
I was thinking mystery shopper and strategic planning.
Yes. Mystery Shopper, $100,000. Strategic Planning, $70,000. Total of those two would be $170,000 plus the $390,000 previously that we said was unallocated.
Okay, well, I think we've been referring to the category as professional services, and now that we're talking about line items, I haven't heard anybody with any opposition to the strategic planning initiative. Is there anybody that has any heartburn with that? Okay, so I kind of think we're talking about the website expense and the mystery shopper expense. Does anybody want to weigh in on that? That's what I'm kind of hearing developing here.
Well, I think the only thing you need to consider is you've got a lot of sunk costs already in that website. It is a contract that you approved in past years.
Well, but here I think we're discussing the 60,000 increase and the $100,000 allocated for Mystery Shopper.
Yeah, the 60,000, maybe I'm confused on that also as far as how it relates to the contract you've entered.
Okay, so if we had a motion to approve as submitted with a statement that we will revisit the $60,000 increase for the website redesign and the $100,000 Mystery Shopper project, is everybody in agreement with that? David and Kenny, you've had most comments. You guys good with that?
Say your proposal one more time. Make sure I can.
That we approve the motion as submitted with a statement that we will revisit the website, the increase of 60,000 on the website redesign and the 100,000 Mystery Shopper project. Is everybody good with that?
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think you're directing the question to the board members, and I apologize for interjecting, but the website is under contract already. The Mystery Shopper, we haven't done anything with that, so if you wanted to put that in unallocated, we don't have any current commitment with anyone for that. For strategic planning, while I appreciate you wanting to go ahead and approve it, if you didn't want to, 70,000 of that is what we do not have committed already.
So the website, Roger, was a competitive procurement that was awarded. So that makes it a little bit more complicated. I mean, we do have a contract for delivery, and that doesn't mean we couldn't stop where we're going, but that would be hard.
I'd just like to mention, I haven't shared it before, but our current platform will be obsolete next year. This is just a perfect storm. We are on Drupal, and it will not be supported anymore next year.
Okay. And on our previous website, there were security issues, and that's the reason why we've been taking all of our migrating all of our websites to the new platforms because security continues to be, you know, the challenging issue of the day.
And we're getting a lot of pressure from TWC to ensure that we have that type of security for our websites.
David, I'll remind you that our top discussion with Ed Cerna the other day, that was one of the areas that he made very clear that there would be very little, if any, flexibility on the part of the board as far as meeting their security requirements.
Correct.
Okay, so website is committed. So, not hearing any opposition to the strategic planning funding, we're basically down to the Mystery Shopper. I think that's what I'm hearing. Are we all in agreement with that? Any other opposition to the motion, the budget as submitted, and the motion as recommended? So if we adopted this motion with a follow-up that the mystery shopper, the $100,000 for the mystery shopper, which would be approved in this budget, would not be executed without additional discussion between the board and staff.
Wouldn't do that.
Roger, I would prefer it to be stricken from this budget and that $100,000 be put somewhere else for board input.
Okay.
I mean, it's a line item. It can be put back in as easily, but to take it out, I think, gives us more flexibility than leaving it in.
Okay, Kenny, I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you making that as a motion?
Well, it would be yes.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion. And who made the second?
John.
I'm sorry?
John.
John, thank you. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
One opposition. The motion carries. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Now let me find, for all these notes I've been writing, let me find out where we are.
So, Roger, could I just make one comment while you're looking?
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
So I think what I heard, I want to confirm this, is that we changed the unallocated contingency funds from 390,348 to 490,348. And we also, with that, we changed the budget from 15,842,777 to 15,742,777. Did I get that right, Randy?
Yes, that's the way I understood it.
Okay, so I want to confirm that because we will feather those numbers in as verbally what was said within the motion, but I just wanted to make that clear.
I'm in agreement. Kenny, you in agreement?
That's fine.
Okay.
And the comment I'd like to make, Roger, is that this is some of the best discussion that we've had on the budget since I've been on the board, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. And I apologize for drawing it out, and I think we all walk away from this understanding that, and I've already noted in my calendar for next June to get this on the agenda earlier and through committees earlier. Okay, so moving right along. The next item on the agenda is the Executive Committee, Roger Harris. Great. So the suspension of UI work search contact requirements during the COVID situation, a special meeting of the Executive Committee was held May 29th. During this meeting, the Executive Committee voted to suspend the UI work search contact requirement policy per TWC's encouragement that board align with TWC minimum requirement during the COVID-19 pandemic. Christina, you want to help kind of preface this statement so the board understands what's going on? Or Dana?
Actually, I think it would be Dana.
Dana, yes.
Policy.
Sorry, everyone. I was trying to get to my mute button. We did, TWC did suspend, the commissioner suspended work search requirements during the COVID situation that we're currently under. And so we actually just brought it to the board, be the executive committee, because we currently had a policy that identified work search requirements. So we were just suspending our current policy so that we would align with TWC's mandate as we're currently under.
So as a follow-up to that, in our executive committee, I think I mentioned the fact that we're having a hard time finding people because of the stimulus and various reasons. And then I think there was a follow-up comment made that the stimulus money is the biggest competitor to business trying to find employees. So
yeah, Roger, I was the one that made our industry have told us in Terrell that they can't get employees back to work because of the, as long as that was going on, it was hard to get them back to work.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm hearing that almost daily from our folks. So Dana, number one, I think I wanted to express that so that any contact that we have either in the executive director's weekly call or anywhere that we can raise that as an issue, that we should be discussing that and we should be revisiting the work search requirements as early as we can.
Okay. We will take that as an action item.
Understood. Thank you.
Okay. The next item is the North Central Texas Council of Government contract deliverables report with David Setzer.
So just a technical question. Because the executive committee approved that, does the full board need to approve that policy on the suspension of the work search?
According to our bylaws, they do not need to ratify it. Roger is to inform them of the action that the board took on, that the executive committee took on their behalf. They can revisit it if they wish to, but there is not a requirement to ratify it.
That's my understanding as well, David.
All right. So in your packet, this is not the first time you've seen this. We started it last year, and this is a response to a section in the board COG contract that was renegotiated in 2018, section 5, I believe, that laid out a number of reportable items that we needed to do as the staff, providing that information back to the board. And this is just a matter of the first column there is the contract action item, the frequency that happens, the format, its status, whether it's, you know, it could be a one-time or ongoing, any other comments assigned to that, and then the board or committees that information goes to. And then the citation is the citation out of the contract. So, we weren't planning on going into a lot of detail in this, but it is something, a deliverable that we felt like we needed to provide you on an annual basis. We did it last year. This is a little upgraded report. So we're just providing that for your review in terms of how we are meeting those deliverables that you put into the contract. We can certainly give you time to look at them and bring those back and talk about how any changes, things you might want to see next year. But these are the deliverables that you put into the contract and how we are meeting them. Any questions on that?
My only comment, David, is with the amount of information there, could we add this to the next executive committee agenda as well? Not really for any action, but just give the executive committee an opportunity to mention it or
bring absolutely it
up, whatever. Thank you.
Absolutely. So that would take us, Roger, to C, nominating committee.
Okay, so it's that time of year again. And I just want to, I've mentioned a couple times, and I'm not sure I'm satisfied with the way I'm communicating it, but I've got to tell the board that in my time on the board, I've never seen the expertise, the depth that we have. We have so many people that are extremely talented, either from an educational standpoint, from a career standpoint. During our time on the board, you know, I keep hearing what Carlton's doing out in Terrell, Kenny in Stephenville. We have some very talented people. We have so many talented people that it's hard to put together the executive committee because we've got talent that aren't on the executive committee. So it's rather interesting in the chair position to bring these items up where you want to bring them to a full board, but you don't want to have these marathon sessions. What I'm saying is that for you board members that are coming up to speed and maybe new on the board, we are facing some succession challenges, both in the board member leadership component and staff. So there's definitely going to be some people rolling off. I'm termed out. If I was chosen or elected, I'm going to be timed out. We've got other people that either retirement or whatever that are going to be creating a vacuum and need for people getting engaged and taking leadership role over the next few years. So I appreciate the nominating committee. There's a tremendous amount of experience and history between the people on the nominating committee, and I'm just appealing to all the board members to stay engaged, get involved in committees, whatever we can do to continue to build this board into the workforce development environment that we've been creating on the board for the tenure of all the people here, including David Setzer. So with that being said, I'm going to turn the nominating committee report and the board officer election section over to Roz.
Thank you very much and good afternoon. As a nominating committee, we enjoyed going through and checking out everybody. And it is not easy to come up with all of your names, but we are recommending that our fearless leaders will be Roger Harris, and he would be in as the chair, David Bristol, who would come in as vice chair, and Dr. Gay Goodwin come in as secretary. And that is the recommendation from the nominating committee. Ball's in your court, Roger.
And that is in the form of a motion, I believe.
If we're allowed to make it as a motion.
Yeah, I believe that's protocol. So I'm taking that as a motion. Do we have a second?
This is Terry, I'll second.
Yeah, I had a couple people there. Did anybody make out who that was?
This is Jackal.
Gary Henderson.
Okay,
Gary Henderson will take. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to serve. I very much appreciate the opportunity of the other officers and the people that sit on the executive committee. And I really, from my perspective with the TAB, and I can't believe it's only been like 2 or 3 weeks, but the amount of work that I've done there, and I see what we have as staff and board members, I really expect some really big things over the next couple of years on our board. That being said, again, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to serve, and we'll go to the executive director's report.
All right. Very quickly, I will give you a very high-level COVID-19 update. As you know, when we started into this, we were doing we started off doing weekly updates, or actually more frequently than that. I think we were doing a couple of times a week, and then we went to once a week. And so we got to a point in we kind of got to a point of equilibrium along about late June, early July, and so we made a commitment then that we would suspend those emails, but if anything significant came along, that we would bring it back to you. And really, we've continued in that maintaining mode since then. So, but a couple of things have changed. So, child care, you heard in Randy's budget presentation about the essential worker budget and the money that we had to spend for that. That has ended. Remember, people had a period of enrollment that they could sign up for, and their enrollment period was for 90 days. So all of those have exited the program. We had over 1,800 children in care as a result of essential worker. Our target is going to be lower for our average number of children per day, but we don't have that number yet. It should be imminent coming out, so we'll bring that to you when we know what it's going to be. And just in general, performance is going to be very tricky for the next 3 years. You heard Michael talking about the state setting the end of the year numbers as of what we were pre-COVID, which would be the end of February. So how some of these measures that have been greatly impacted by COVID, how those are going to be measured going forward is going to be very interesting over the next 2 to 3 years, because remember, many of those are lagging measures, and the data will be around for a while. TWC, in response to some requests from the commissioners to find a way to do more with upskilling of many of these people that are claiming UI, put together a very quick procurement. They had, it's kind of an emergency, exigent circumstance type of procurement for a system that could do this upskilling. And just a little history, we had actually issued an RFP as a board prior to that. So we were already moving that way as a board. And TWC selected two systems, the Metrics Learning System, and there was one other that was awarded. It was a multiple award, but the other one has since dropped out, I believe. So it's the Metrics Learning System, which when we did our analysis and analyzed our RFP responses for this, the metric system was our choice also. So there's a little bit difference in how those two awards work. The state award is primarily for UI claimants and people in eventually in our WIOA programs. But because we procured that under our North Texas Shares, which is a cooperative procurement, it can be made available to other entities and other nonprofits, other of our stakeholders. All they have to do is join that collaborative, and then they can get access to this system, which has over 5,000 courses in it with over 100 certifications that can be achieved in that system, and it's very cost-effective. We still have no hard date to begin moving back into the centers, along with the conversation we were having earlier about the return to job search. I think that will be the tipping point for that. We have a plan. I believe we've posted it internally on our team's website, but we have a plan that we've gone through a couple of times now, and we think it's a good plan on how we're going to do that. It will be a phased roll-in of return to the centers, starting with our four biggest centers and partial staff. And so it's very detailed, so we can share that with anybody that would like to know how that's going to go forward. We've been trying to stay in contact with our staff throughout this. We've had a couple of town hall meetings. We just had one on September, I think it was the 14th. Keeping in contact, keeping everybody apprised of what's going on. And so that's basically where we are in terms of COVID. Does anybody have a specific question about anything that's going on with response to COVID, our reaction to COVID? Okay, if not, then I wanted to take a break. Go ahead.
You know, I'll make a comment on that, especially in light of the fact that it was earlier mentioned that our branding is being affected by the unemployment UI. I don't know if everybody saw in the news last night that California has basically shut down their entire UI section because of fraud, and they're just getting overwhelmed. And I know Texas has taken a lot of heat. It's certainly something that I don't think they've ever dealt with before, but we haven't gotten to that point yet. So just FYI, one of the other states in a very similar situation that Texas is, in the fact that we're heavily populated, we hit spikes about the same time, we still have our UI system up and running, and we're looking at getting back into the centers, which is good, interesting news. Having said that, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and I would agree with you, although we can't, we haven't had anything rise to the level of what California is seeing. We do have some fraud. We've had a couple of instances in our board area that we know have been addressed. So TWC is working on that. It's, you know, a lot of it's involved with identity theft, where people can take your identity and apply. And so, again, maintain your security as high as you can on your personal information. So going on to the Hermes Award, Hermes is an award structure that recognizes excellence in media and graphics. And we applied a few years back, and it's kind of like the AEP Award, which y'all are familiar with, which I'll be bringing to you, that we have achieved that for the 10th consecutive year at a future board meeting, but I know we've done it. Hats off to Mary for that application oversight. But this award, you're measured against a standard more than competing against each other. So we submitted several of our things that we created. The highest award level is the creative, for the Creative Awards competition, is a platinum award. And your FY19 annual report was recognized in that category as a platinum award winner. And also, we got a second highest, a gold, for our brand awareness campaign. So this is validation for us that we're kind of moving in the right direction, and that we're competitive against other organizations that are doing these same types of things. So, and again, we did a lot of this stuff in-house. You heard Roger allude to the fact that we have developed a really great staff. We have internalized some things, like, you know, we used to have a contract external for our brand management and our materials. We've brought that internal, and it's paying big dividends. So we're really proud of that. And Stephanie Roberts kind of oversees that. It's in Christina's shop, but we're real proud of the fact that we were recognized again by this organization with these awards. And that will end my director's report.
David, would you also kind of brief everybody on where you are with the Texas Quality Award?
Okay. We are, so we submitted our application in August. It was actually late July, early August. And we've just been notified that our site visit will be coming in November. What we need to do now is we used pretty much all of our budget on the existing contract, but we went back to the COG Executive Board and extended it. We have the opportunity to go up 25% on the original contract without re-procuring. So we did that, and we are using those additional funds. It's about $27,000, and we're using that for our consultants to come in and prep us for the site visit. And Debbie will tell you, the application is your job, it's your resume, and the site visit is the interview. So you can have a really good resume, but you can really be bad at interviewing. So what we want to make sure that, and they can interview literally any of our board staff, they can independently select anybody to talk to. So we just want to make sure that, you know, people that aren't used to that type of activity have some counseling, some assistance in how you might respond to that, which is a good thing. Because we're doing all of this stuff, it's difficult for everybody in the organization to know everything everybody's doing, although we've tried very hard to really do that. So that's kind of where we are. Debbie, what would, after the site visit, which is going to be virtual, so this is going to be something new that they've done and we're doing, then the time frame is, early next year, possibly February or so, we would find out, they would announce the award winners, and then they have a whole set of award ceremonies that you go to. Debbie, yes. Anything else?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I'm working with the consultants. You've got staff that have made the investment, and David has made the investment in staff understanding this criteria and how you use it to better do your business. And while we'll be able to have a more smooth site visit with the help of these external eyes, we also think that, you know, when we did the elevator speeches with y'all, it's important to try to be able as staff to tell your story in a way that's clear cut. And really, this is going to let us practice our elevator speeches, because David's correct. We have a complex business, and to be able to concisely nail it and do it in without jargon, that's going to be helpful for us doing our business as well as the site visit. So we're really looking forward to it, but it's a lot of work.
Excellent. Very good. Any comments, discussion, questions? Okay. We have no need for an executive session, and therefore there will not be results of the executive session. Under other business, I wanted to mention a couple things. For the new board members, those that are still trying to get their arms around what we do, this meeting, I think, is a very good example of the process at work. It's normal for us to not agree on the budget, to not have discussed it before we got to this point. That's why we're here. That's the process. And it's very good. It's rewarding to listen to it, to learn how we conduct our business. And I also felt it important to understand that the quality of our staff, as you just heard from David's report, is incredible. So we've got, as I may have mentioned several times, and I'm continually really impressed with the quality and the expertise of the people we've got sitting around the table. Earlier it was discussed or mentioned the branding and the Texas Workforce Commission PR effort that was mentioned in the executive director's report. One thing that hasn't been mentioned is this PR effort that they're doing is going to come in and work with Texas Workforce Commission, and having chaired an airport board during a time that had some major neighborhood issues, and having PR people involved, I have to tell you that there's nothing like having some professional PR training to help you respond to the public. I mean, the damage is kind of already done usually. So really what you're doing is putting a good proper face on the news as it unfolds after that. And that effort is going to include working with our executive director and management staff in that training. As a matter of fact, it was even mentioned in the TOB board meeting that they're going to discuss maybe having some of the board leadership involved in that. Another comment, I don't want to underestimate the information that is in that state statute that's the end of your packet. Kenny just happened to make a comment during our executive committee meeting. Carvin sent it out in reviewing it. I think it's a tremendous amount of information and excellent background information for all board members to see. That comes right out of the state statute labeled board duties. So if you see it, you have any questions, have any suggestions, please don't hesitate to email me, David, Christina, and we'll see if we can't get that subject or your question responded to. Does anybody else have any other business they'd like to bring up to the board? I apologize for the marathon session. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Or we can all stay here if you'd like.
So moved.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed can remain on Zoom. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We look forward to future meetings. And thank you again for your election to chair.
Thank you, everyone.